karma means that rajogunam and tamogunam will instead cause degradation. Cause degradation. So to be warning, just like awareness to create that, Krishna has spoken that which we have seen last few weeks. And then after that, Krishna spoke about the karta, the doer. Even the doer is in the three modes of nature, sattvagunam, rajogunam, tamogunam. And that is what we were talking about, that Krishna says there, mukta sango anaham vadi dhadi ulsaha samanvidaha siddhya siddhayo nirvagara karta satya uchale. That's the word we were talking about, isn't it? So Krishna's point is that unless one has come to the spiritual platform, and where mukta sango anaham vadi, the two definitions he has given there, mukta sangaha anaham vadi, that's important. It is based on that mukta sangam and anaham vadi that his sattvika kartottam, or as the doer of, I am the doer in the mode of goodness, will come to that person. You can see that explanation. That is why when we talked about it last Sunday also, I was mentioning there that first of all, we have to realize that who is the doer? Who is the doer? Alpa is never the doer. Alpa has nothing to do with it. Doership is all in the subtle body with our ego, the identification of the ego. That's where it is coming from. So, but when we identify with the doership in the subtle body as I am the doer, it does create an impression inside what is later on builds up inside the subtle body. So, all this samskaram, I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, which Krishna has totally rejected in the second chapter. The doer and enjoyer must go. Ragadvesha vimuktaistu vishayani dhiyaischaran. Krishna is saying that, isn't it? So, once you have the doership and ownership, then it will create ragam dvesham in a person. And when there is ragam dvesham in a person, it is not possible to move on to the higher platform of the self. Platform of the self. That is why you are saying there that all this samskaram is created in the platform of the mind, manomandalam, in the field of the mind. And none of them is touching our real identity as Atma. In the soul, it never touches. It cannot touch the soul at all. And if we have realized that completely, then what will happen is that asangatvam. Asangatvam means that not sticking to anything. Not sticking. Asangatvam means that. Not sticking to anything. That asangatvam will become very natural thing in a person. Very natural thing in a person. That is why, while talking about Alpa, Alpa's nature discussed in the Bhagavad Gita as well as the Bhagavatam also, asangvayam, asangvayam, asangvayam. Always stressing this point. Asangata, asangatvam. Asangvayam, asangvayam, asangvayam. Puna puna. Sachidananda rupoham aham evaham ave. That is the definition of the Atma's position there. So, so Sangam has to go. Sangam has to go. And Sangam is a natural thing in the subtle body, but at the same time, the very nature of the Sangam, Asangam is, very nature of Asangam is the nature of Atma. Atma's very nature is Asangam. Atma never touches anything. It doesn't stick to anything in any sense. It doesn't even stick to this body or to talk about anything else. We are all under this misunderstanding that Atma is in touch with the body. Atma is not in touch with the body. In Atma's presence, the body grows. But Atma is not in touch with the body under any circumstances. This realization comes much later, as you have seen in the case of Parikshit. Parikshit realizes that at the last minute he says to Sudeva Goswami, isn't it? That I realize who I am now, that I have nothing to do with this body. That realization comes to him. But that is a later thing. But by nature, Swarupam of Alpa is, doesn't want to touch anything. Ragam Dvesham, Kartrutva Bhoktrutvam, any of the material elements, external world, Maya, none of them has any connection with Alpa under any circumstances. Because neither with the body or the mind or with other personalities, none of them, it has any connections. And this is the factor what is taken into account, particularly while going into the deep sleep state, which is a proof of that. That in everyday life, in the deep sleep state, we recognize that where has everything gone. The connection with the body has gone, connection with the mind is gone, connection with intelligence is gone, senses are gone, and with the world it has gone. And still, in that deep sleep state, we experience the bliss of the Atma, Atma's blissful nature. That is what, when we come out from the deep sleep state, we declare to the world, I had such a deep experience in the deep sleep state. And but this realization, what we have in the deep sleep state, which we acknowledge when we come back to the vacant state, unfortunately we lose it straight away. Like when we wake up, first thing in the morning, we wake up. And when we wake up, immediately the identification with the body begins. And with the identification with the body, jnanam or avidya or ignorance also begins with that. So actually, although we say we have woken up to ignorance. We have not woken up to knowledge. When we wake up in the morning, actually we are waking up to ignorance. Isn't it? Because there is no awareness of the self even at that moment. On the other hand, we fall down further and further when we come down to the other states of existence. That is what Krishna is saying this point also. Mukta sango anaham kriti. Anaham gadi, he says. Two things he has kept it together. Because, so, Vedam, he says to us that how easy it is to reject everything what you are possessing or what you are attached to in the vacant state and in the dream state when you go into deep sleep. How easily you are able to throw it away when you went to the deep sleep state. So, that is why he says here, asangoham, asangohi ayam purushaha. That is where this mantra comes in the Upanishads also. Purusha by nature is asangam. He has no sangam anywhere. So, always, purusha is always asangatum, asangatum. So this giving up this awareness or identification with the body, giving up the identification with the personality, in the body, in the vacant state, what we have, to remain as you are in the state of self or Atma, in the deep sleep state, if we have transported that back into the vacant state, then we will become conscious that none of the impurities can touch the self. No impurities can touch the self. And as long as we become more and more aware of that, we come to this second state, what Krishna calls it as anaham vadi. That means, the more we become conscious of mukta sangatam, so what Krishna says there? Mukta sangha. That will lead into, subsequently, to the next phase, what is anaham vadi. Anaham vadi won't happen otherwise. Anaham vadi means the losing that false identification or the ego inside, false ego inside. That's called anaham vadi. And that will only happen when Mukta Sangam happens. That is what leads to Anahamvadi. Mukta Sangam is awareness, becoming conscious of our identity as a self, is not touched by any of these things, neither the modes of nature, nor by the material body, not by the mind, not by the intelligence, not by the ego, none of them has anything to do with the self. Alma is always on a higher level. It is unaffected by anything, untouched by anything, and doesn't stick to anything. Therefore, it's addressed as asangam. That asangatum, realization when it happens to a person, in a very, very natural way, Krishna is saying here, that what will result that, he will become anahamvadi. Anahamvadi means that ego with which he has identified with the body, and with the mind, or with the world, or with intelligence, that all he completely sheds it. He sheds it away. So, as much as soon as you realize this anahamvadi, then you will know that this thing called aham, what we falsely aware, become conscious of aham, which we are now, in all our transactions in this world, or vyaharam in this world, how we identify with that as aham. Aham means I am, I am, I am. That thing, that you will realize that it practically doesn't have any meaning. Practically, it doesn't have any meaning. And that insight will become more clear at that stage. It is at that stage that insight will come to us. That today, while doing all the transactions in this world and dealing with others in the world, we have this I in us. That this I goes away at the point when this Mukta Sangatvam comes. That means when the Alma, when we realize ourselves, come to our platform of the soul and becomes released from the grip of the body and the mind, and Sangam has broken away. The Sangam is a false thing inside. It's not real. Like the ego is real, Sangam is also real. Somehow or the other, a false identification with the body. It's a false identification. Alma has no connection with the body. Alma is always freedom from the body. That is Alma's glory, isn't it? And the Yami is always saying that. It's glorious position, untouched by anything. So all the sadhana, what we execute in spiritual life, is always somehow to wipe off this pride or this angadi from inside, to support that, to help that these sadhanas are performed. And the benefit of all the sadhana is somehow or the other that this powerful identification with the ego as a body, as a self, as the ego, as the self, an identification with that, to completely slice it off, to wipe it away from inside, therefore all this sadhana. And as much as a devotee realizes this through remembrance of Krishna's form, or through the in the case of devotees, or in the case of jnanis, when they realize that what exists there is only Atma, and that he is not a broken piece from that, separately, instead, then he will come out of that limited identity, what he has got at the moment. It is also an ignorance it is to identify with a limited body like this and to think that I am the body. So already we have limited ourselves to this body due to the presence of the body and due to the false identification with the body. We are thinking this limited existence, limited awareness, in other words, limited consciousness, everything comes from that. So, and to come out of that and to be in perfection and Purnada, what Upanishad says, Purnada, the perfection, that won't happen that till we come to this Asangatvam stage. So Asangatvam leads to Anahamvadi. That is the reason why it is spoken in that way. Muktaha, Mukta Sango, Anahamvadi, Dhridi, Ulsaha, Samanvitaha, Shuddhya, Ashuddhir, Nurvilagaha, Karta, Satika, Muchale. So you can see where this mode of goodness has its influence in us. The mode of goodness influence is like this. Mode of goodness is not only in eating, sleeping and other things, in the gross bodily activities. Mode of goodness has to affect us in such a way that it has to develop that sattva sanjayate jnanam, that knowledge inside builds up in such a way that I get released from this, that I have no connection with the body. That is the first step in that way. That develops inside. Freedom from that connection with the body. And once that develops, it leads into that I have already falsely identified for so many lifetimes with body. And that identification was in the form of false ego, that I am this body. It's an ego. And that ahankaram, what was there, that also disappears along with that. So that is satyat. Sattvya karta. Karta is only sattvyam if this Mukta Sangam and Anahamvadi is present in that person. So so what we are seeing there is that when this realization comes, which one? This Mukta Sangam Anahamvadi, Dhridil Saha Samanyudaha, his whole nature changes. Dhridi changes, Ulsaham changes. Dhridi Ulsaha Samanyudaha. We will come to that later. What is Dhridi in the three modes of nature? How it works? So, but what Krishna is pointing out here is that self-realization, when one has reached that stage, all his activities, it is only an expression of that chit potency or chit shakti, what is inside. It's not anymore from the mind. It is from the chit shakti. Like you, as you know, Satya Chitta Anandam is the very nature of the soul. And that Chit Shakti, that's flowing from the from the Chidvasanam, it is called, or Chitshakti, from where the mind has also taken its birth inside, the mind dissolves and goes away, and purely the Chitshakti or Chitpotency operates there, and that is an indication of the pure expression of the love that is in Atma, the soul or pure consciousness. So, what we have to understand here is that all karma that is coming through this body is nothing but an expression of the experience of the soul. Because without the soul's presence, karma cannot happen. Without the soul's presence, karma cannot happen. That's the most important thing. So, and every karma, whenever that function happens through the body, behind that, the presence of the soul is there. Without which karma cannot happen. You can see that as soon as the life, Atma has left the body, that body is not capable of performing any karma after that. Isn't it? So, Krishna is saying here that due to the presence of Atma inside, the very expression of that Atma itself is turns into Dhriti and Ulsaham. Dhriti and Ulsaham is a development from that. Why? Because when one has Dhriti and Ulsaham, the way he operates will be in a completely different level than a person who works in this world with his mind and the body. When we work with the mind and the body, normally we will have some expectations from that, some results what we are expecting from that. And when we are satisfied with the expectations or of our results, then accordingly we tune our karma also along with that. But because if you don't get that expectation what you have, then you are not feeling any fulfillment from that karma. That is the problem with that karma. When our expectations are not fulfilled from our actions, or when it is not satisfying our desires or ahankaram or ego inside, then those activities will not create that fulfillment what normally you would have in the way a person in the satya karma, satya mode performs the karma. So, Krishna is saying here, siddhya asiddhya nirvikaraha, that is the nature of the person in the a person who is doing karma in the mode of goodness. Siddhya asiddhya nirvikaraha, whether he gets it, whether he doesn't get it, whether he gets it or doesn't get it, whether he has made profit or doesn't make any profit, whatever it may be, he will be in that state. He will be in that state. It's a very elevated state in the spiritual life, that to be in the mode of sattvagunam, in the mode of sattvagunam, to be a karta, to be a doer in the mode of sattvagunam. As I mentioned this story before also, I think, that there was one sannyasi who had a small ashram, along with that a small piece of land connected with that. Now, this sannyasi, he spent quite some time in this piece of land, and when the season came, he planted some fruits there, different kinds of fruits. And by his nature, he always wanted to engage in some activity, and he grew this more like a banana plantation, what he was growing. He grew that, he watered the plants very well, and you have to look after these plants well so that you get a good crop from that. So because he had this land, he spent his energy and time in growing this banana plants in his small garden. When they grew up, and normally it takes 6-7 months for the plant to grow, and a bunch of bananas comes out, and naturally constantly watering them and maintain looking after them with proper manure and fertilizer, whatever that he was to do. He did all that, and all the trees, because they were planted the same side, they all came out with a huge bunch of bananas. When they all came out, first year, he cut them all the bananas from the tree, and all these bunches, he took it off and went around all around the village and distributed to all the different houses. He gave it free to them and told them, these bananas are grown and there is nobody to eat them at home in our ashram. We have plenty of them, so please have it. And he had to go and distribute it. many instances he realized it, that many people had sufficient bananas, they did not want them. So he was in a dilemma, what to do about these bananas. But he continued doing this year after year. But after 2 or 3 years, once it so happened, that a thief entered into this plantation and cut all the bunches of banana what he has grown and took them and gone away from there. So one morning when he got up, he looked at the plantation and he saw that all the bananas were gone from the garden. So local people were saying to him, why do you grow all these things if you can't use them, first thing. Secondly, you don't sell them, you are just distributing it free. And now that somebody has come and stolen it. These are the different opinion of the people. His answer was, he says to them, that earlier I grew it because I had to do some karma. This is my nature. The body's nature was that I had to be engaged in doing something. Land was there. And I enjoyed growing these bananas. But I was thinking that people are not very interested in the bananas because probably they had their own and they couldn't take everything. So it was at that time Krishna sent this person as the form of this thief and he has taken away everything. At least somebody has got the benefit from that. This is how he has analyzed it and that was his opinion. He made say that that when I see these bunches of bananas standing there, I feel extremely satisfied with that. So and I had this tension in my mind, what should I do with all these bananas later? Because they also, if you don't use them, they also start rotting after a while, isn't it? So, there were not enough people to utilize that. And I suddenly realized that Krishna has sent someone who needs them. And he has taken them away. So, has he not done something good for me? He has really helped me by doing that, he said. So, therefore, that desire for results has gone away from him. He hasn't had any more looking at it, that I will sell them, I'll make so much money. He was not profit-oriented. That is the karma Krishna is talking about. That Mukta-sango and Aham-vadi and Dhrini Ulsaha Samanvidaha and the third line, Siddhya Asiddhya Nurvigaraha. That has to happen. Siddhya Asiddhya Nurvigaraha. Krishna is saying that. So this Siddhya Asiddhya Nurvigaraha is this. That irrespective of what happened to the produce, what he produced in the garden, he found that somebody has used it. He was satisfied with that. He was not particular that he had to get something out of it. As long as somebody has utilized that, he was happy with that. Siddhya Asiddhya Nurvigaraha. So people asked him, why do you struggle so hard to grow all these things? His answer was that I enjoy doing that work. That is my karma I'm getting through this body. And I'm enjoying that. Dhriti ulsaha samanyinaha. Whoever gets the result of that, it is the good. But it doesn't matter where it goes. Somebody should have it. So no matter who enjoys that, and because in his realization, he is seeing even through that thief, Krishna is enjoying that benefit. Krishna is enjoying that the produce, what he has produced there. So, therefore he says, Vishyado chakshusham, Vishyado moha, angushta matram purishaha, angushta samashridaha, isha sarvasya jalaha, prabhu vihari. Upanishad says like this, that as much as this realization comes, that is where this Siddhya Siddhya Nurvigaraha, all this is difficult unless one understands it properly. So Krishna's point is that same absolute truth, Krishna, who is present in everyone's heart as the Prabhu, as Antaryami, and it is Antaryami who is experiencing this in the form of thief who came and taken away everything from him. And only that devotee who had that experience and realization, then who has that experience and that realization, then he will know that he is not experiencing anymore the results of his karma. Karma phalam, the experience of karma goes away for him and he is not affected afterwards. Once this realization comes, which one? Siddhya Siddhya Nurvigaraha. Once that realization comes, then any after effects coming in his life, results after that, you can more or less say that he will not connect it up with his karma. Connection with the karma is broken. That is the point Krishna is making here. At one stage, we lose this connection with the karma. For example, now, when even devotees also will say like this, that when we get into some serious difficulty with the health or some other problems, relationship problems, whatever it is, people will say like this, that it is my karma, isn't it? I must have done something in previous life or previous times in life to disturb, upset somebody. After effect of that has come to me in this form. Krishna has punished me like this. Krishna has put me into this situation. Or sometimes we will come to some conclusions like this. That is okay. That is for temporary relief only. That's, we make it like this because we don't understand the subtle side of the karma. What Krishna is pointing out to us, Atma under no circumstances is a doer. Atma is not doing any karma at any time. It is your identification with the body and the subtle body that is causing all the good and bad after effects of the karma. But once you have broken up that connection, whatever that happens in life subsequently has nothing to do with your life or with your awareness. It will not have any effect on you or any impact on you. That's the point Krishna is pointing out here. Mukta Sango Anaham Vadi, that Dhruti Ulsaha Samanjidaha Siddhya Asiddhya Nurvigaraha. See that word, Nurvigaraha. At that stage, there is no vigaram, there is no excitement, there is no emotions inside. No matter, whatever after effects come from our actions. Remember this, Krishna has spoken this earlier as a direct instruction. Now it is spoken a lot more in a more how it happens. If you remember, in the fourth chapter, Krishna mentioned there, that na karma bhalasam yogam svabhavastu pravartate. There also Krishna has pointed out that karmam and its bhalam, there is no samyogam. There is no connection, interaction between the karmam and the bhalam. These are two different things. Karmam is one side, bhalam is different. Na karma bhalasam yogam, that bhalasam yogam is not there between karmam and its result. Svabhavastu pravartate. Svabhavam is a part of the prakriti, which is a part of the subtle body. That is what's working and that's causing the results. Now, karma was, Atma has no relationship with the karma. Atma has no relationship with the bhalam either, with the result either. And that's the point Krishna made it clear to us in the earlier chapter. Now Krishna is saying, how does that happen? When it comes to the karta is in the mode of goodness, only there it happens. Only in the mode of goodness, this particular realization will come to him. Na karma bhalasam yogam svabhavastu pravartate. He will realize that sangha sangam siddhya siddhyo nirvikaraha. Siddhya siddhyo nirvikaraha. To remain like that, it's not easy. That when we are attached to the results of the karma, never matter who it is, and in all states, we are always attached to the karma and its results. And we always wait up, whoever it may be. He is looking at it. That is why attachment is there. But to break that connection with the karma and its results, it is not so easy. And that will continue to be there till we come to the state of this karta satyika muchade. Krishna says there, karta satyika muchade. In the sattva-guram, karma and karma-phalam relationship is broken completely. You won't be concerned, like in the case of this sannyasi we were talking about. He grew things, and as long as he was concerned, he had some karma to be experienced through that body. Only with that understanding he was executing his karma. Whatever was created as effects of that karma, it did not bother him. Where it has gone. Karma phalam was not important for him. For him the important thing was the connection with the karma is broken. Karma mena karma phalam. And that has already happened. Therefore, his karma was in the mode of sattva-guna. Sattva-guna. Therefore, he is a karta in the sattva-guna. So, that is what is the most important point to remember here. See, in each verse, when you look at this in the 18th chapter, you will see this particularly, that how that progression, spiritual development in a person happens in our daily life, provided he is recognizing these things. In his own way, he will come to know that I mean, the same thing what Krishna is saying here, if you have lived in this world and if you are a little bit thoughtful, you can also understand this. It doesn't require a separate explanation for that. That a person has lived in this world for some time and he has seen, observed the world properly, he will know this. That karma and karma phalam, they have no relationship. Practically they have no relationship. Superficially, we will say that there is a relationship. Superficially. But in reality, there is no relationship. That takes a little while. You will understand that when you see this world. But Krishna has made it a little bit more technical and telling us that the progression, how it happens. Mukta Sangaha, Anaham Vadi, then he says, Dhriti Ulsaha Samanyuraha, and Siddhya Siddhyo Nurvigaraha, then Karta Satya Uchale. That Satya Kartava, the Satya Karta means one who is executing karma in the Satya mode. Because our goal is to first to come to the Satya stage, isn't it? Because Satyagunam, nothing can be done. Nothing can be done. Satyagunam is the topmost priority, beyond everything else. So to remain in that Satyagunam, Krishna mentions this throughout Bhagavatam. If you look into the 13th chapter, in the 11th canto, you will see there, first 10 verses is all about Satyagunam. Krishna constantly telling us, Satyam, Satyam, Satyam. Why? Satvam sajjayate jnanam. In Satyagunam, jnanam will come, knowledge will come, realization will come. And with that realization, the knowledge, you have to come out of Satyagunam as well. That's in the later day. But initially, majority, 99.9% of the population in the world, if you observe, you will see that Rajagunam, Tamogunam, that is keeping them in their karma. As Karta, they are in the Rajagunam, Tamogunam. As Karmam, they are in the Rajagunam, Tamogunam. Their knowledge is in Rajagunam, Tamogunam. Their Dhriti is in Rajagunam, Tamogunam. Buddhi is in Rajagunam, Tamogunam. Every level, if you analyze it, you will see that Rajogunam and Tamogunam is the two powerful controlling factors of our Karmam and of our Karta. All the modes is in all different levels, Rajogunam, Tamogunam is constantly keeping under their control. So therefore, freeing from the... So Krishna has spoken... That is the reason why Krishna has broken it up into Sattvam, Rajasam, Tamasam. So that we know clearly what it all means. So sometimes what happens is, in Rajogunam, I will be executing karma, and I will be thinking that I have executed all this karma, which is an indication of accents of Satyagunam inside. So it is not easy to free oneself from the lower modes of nature. So therefore, from Tamogunam to Rajogunam and Rajogunam, Satyagunam is spoken in the Bhagavatam in many places. But let us understand this much, that Dhriti Ulsaha Samanyudaha, such a person who has come to that, Dhriti Ulsaha Samanyudaha, that means, in spite of what the results are coming from that, his enthusiasm, ulsaham, will not go away. He won't lament about it, oh, I've done all these things, what has happened, I lost everything. No lamentation there, no hankering after anything. And mukta sangaha, there is no sangam. Anaham vadi, there is no ego in anything. So, this verse is a specific definition of a person who has become perfect in karma. Who has become perfect in the karma. And all that symptoms of that person who has become perfect in his karma is this verse what Krishna has spoken. Therefore he says here, so he knows how to do karma in this world. That's what the point Krishna is making here. Siddhya asiddhyor nirvigaraha and karta satya muchare. Karta satya muchare. After saying this, Krishna is going on to the how to understand that a person who is a doer, if he is doership or kartatvam or karta, if he is in the rajogunam or tamogunam, because sattugunam is a very elevated state, is it not? It's a very elevated state. That Krishna has spoken first. Now, in order to make it more clear to us, Krishna is also telling us who is in the rajogunam a karta and who is in the tamogunam a karta. So that's the next verse. Let's look at the next one. Text 27. Yagi karma phala pretsu.
Yagi karma phala pretsu.
Lubdho himsalpa goshuchi.
Lubdho himsalpa goshuchi.
Harsha shokan vida karta.
Harsha shokan vida karta.
Rajasa parikirtita.
Rajasa parikirtita.
Yagi karma phala pretsu.
Yagi karma phala pretsu.
Lubdho himsalpa goshuchi.
Lubdho himsalpa goshuchi.
Harsha shokan vida karta.
Rajasa
parikirtita.
Rajasa parikirtita.
That's it. Yahi karma phala pretsu lubdhaha himsalpakaha ashuchihi harshaha shokanidaha karta rajasa parikirtidaha. That is the definition. The worker who is attached to the work and the fruits of work, desiring to enjoy those fruits, and who is greedy, always envious, impure, and moved by joy and sorrow, is said to be in the mood of passion. In the mood of passion. So, I think we only have to read through the verses, then we know where we stand. Isn't it? Such a nice way. Krishna says to Arjuna, now he's going to talk about the variations in the Rajasam and Tamasam. Very straightforward, Krishna has spoken. Doesn't require a lot of explanations to that. What is that? First thing, Raga, strong attachment to the karma. Earlier Krishna said, no attachment to karma, no attachment to the results of the karma. That is optimal. Rajasam means attachment to the karma first. And also attachment to the results. Exactly opposite to what was spoken in the Satoma. And then, apart from that, desiring to enjoy the fruits of the karma. More than that. And then, greedy. Luddha. Luddha means greedy. Himsalpam. And Ashuchi. Himsalpam means always that envious, that I'm not getting what I should be getting. And then, hold the flag and fight for the this thing, isn't it? Right for the this thing. I mean, you can see which of these is right. Trade union is right or the employer is right. Who is right? None of them are right, isn't it? So, in the mundane level, for the factories to run, institutions to run, they hold the flag and they go on strike and the ballot paper and this, that and the other, as all these are the perfect laws that's being executed. But spiritually, all of them are zero. Whole thing is completely a false thing. But that's another side. I think you're not interested in that. That's not our concern. Our concern is, what makes a person to come into the mood of goodness? So, Satoguna. So, there you can see, if our karma is in these fields, if our karma action is happening, in the Rajoguna and Tamoguna, there is no possibility of understanding knowledge, spiritual knowledge, won't happen. That is why we can see this also. There is millions of workers in this world, working in different organizations and huge trade unions and all that. But where is the knowledge in any of them? It's just working, bargaining, working, bargaining, working, bargaining. And both sides bargain as much as they could. But unfortunately, this knowledge is not there, what Krishna is talking about here. So therefore, always envious, impure, and moved by joy and sorrow is said to be in the mode of passion. It's interesting that sometimes in every level, organizations level, they say, oh, they had a 3% wage rise. We had only 1.5%. So we are concerned about that. For years, we didn't have a wage rise. That's the argument. And this is a discussion among the big people, is it not? So that's one level. Individually, in one office itself, you will see variations between people. It creates this enmity, each other, enviousness, enmity, everything. So all that is nothing but a symptom of that rajogunam inside. Nothing but symptom of rajogunam. If instead of getting my 2%, if I get 3%, is all my problem solved? Life. But that is the way it is. That rajogunam won't let you go like that. You can't think like that. So, therefore, everybody uses it as a bargain chip, isn't it, in their life. not finding fault with them because that's the way the society is geared up. What can you do? So similarly, that is Rajogunam. Tamasam also Krishna has spoken. Avyakta Pragrada Sabda Shando Naishkrudo Naishkrudo Alasaha Vishadi Dirga Sutri. All these things we saw last Sunday, we spoke about that, isn't it? Karta Tamasa Munchare. So, which is better, Rajogunam or Tamogunam? Rajogunam nature is like this. Tamogunam's nature is, so he doesn't care, he'll do anything what he likes to make his millions in this world. And he's always materialistic. He doesn't care for any shastram, nothing like that. Obstinate, cheating and expert in insulting others. That is his qualification, that he is expert in cheating and insulting others. And he is also lazy, he won't do anything himself. Always he will, what do you call it?
Delegate.
A delegate, yeah. He will be expert at that, in delegating to others. He won't do anything. This you will see in every organization, material or spiritual, doesn't matter. You will see these people. They won't do anything. But they are good at delegating others. Oh, you do this, you do that, you take care of this. Tell everyone, I feel confident. I won't do anything. That is what it's calling here. Naishkari, he won't want to do anything. He's lazy, that's what it is. And then Vishadi, always when the results are not coming, he is lamenting about that. Dirga Sutri, I mentioned last time what Dirga Sutri means. This is the right word for that. Won't make any decision. Dodge around with people. Dodging people all the time in one way or the other. Not making decisions properly and not making any decisions. His way of management is like that. Dirga Sutri. Karta tamasamuchare. Such a person is in tamoguna. It's very hard for him to come out of that. But once it becomes settled like that inside, then everything what you look at in this world will be like that. Then you're not thinking anymore about the... That means no consideration for others. That's what it is. No consideration for others. That I'm causing this problem for somebody else. That awareness is not there in him. He's thinking that it's all a game at the end. If I can get my way through this, and whichever way that is possible, and then he follows that route. Because he made his decision like that. Because me, I'm making the decision. It suits me, so it's okay. That's his attitude. So Krishna is saying that is Tamasi Dirga Sutri. Dirga Sutri nature is very detrimental to spiritual life. That shouldn't happen. Because we won't progress spiritually. Materially you may become sometimes successful. But spiritually there's a total block there. Krishna says that. So after saying all these three karta, different kinds of karta, Krishna is now talking about the person, how his intelligence works in these three different conditions. Satugunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam. How intelligence will work. That's also interesting. Oh, that's the first verse now. Let's look at that. 29. It's very important because buddhi is not in the right place, then nothing will work in spiritually. If buddhi is not in the right place, buddhi has gone to the wrong place, then everything will go in the wrong way in the life. That's it. We will understand that better when we get through this verse. Let's look at that. Buddher Vedam Pradeschevam.
Buddher Vedam Pradeschevam.
Gunastastrividham
Shunom. Gunastastrividham
Shunom. Prochyamanam Asheshena.
Prochyamanam Asheshena.
Prathatvena Dhananjaya.
Prathatvena Dhananjaya.
Buddher Vedam Pradeschevam.
Buddher Vedam Pradeschevam.
Gunastastrividham
Shunom. Gunastastrividham
Shunom. Prochyamanam Asheshena.
Prochyamanam Asheshena.
Prathatvena Dhananjaya.
Prathatvena Dhananjaya.
You notice one thing, Krishna doesn't like this pratak business. Pratakvena. Pratakvena means differently. He's saying here that he has used this before also. You have seen this word pratakvena. Pratak in the earlier words of jnanam also. He said pratakjnanam. Pratakjnanam, as far as Krishna is concerned, is useless. It only destroys your life in this world. Pratakjnanam. And that's why he's saying here also, ഗുണതസ്ത്രിവിധം ശൃണു പ്രോച്യമാനം അശേഷേണ പൃഥക്വേന ധനഞ്ജയ. ഹി സേസ് ദാറ്റ് ഓ വിന്നർ ഓഫ് വെൽത്ത്, നൗ പ്ലീസ് ലിസൺ ആസ് ഐ ടെൽ യു ഇൻ ഡീറ്റെയിൽ ഓഫ് ദി ഡിഫറെന്റ് കൈൻഡ്സ് ഓഫ് അണ്ടർസ്റ്റാൻഡിംഗ് ആൻഡ് ഡിറ്റർമിനേഷൻ അക്കോർഡിംഗ് ടു ത്രീ മോഡ്സ് ഓഫ് മെറ്റീരിയൽ നേച്ചർ. That's a general verse referring both to buddhi and dhruti, both. He's saying that I'm going to tell you now about buddhi as well as dhruti under the three modes of material nature, how they are going to work. It's important to know these things because if you study Bhagavad Gita well, then you will understand the personalities of the Bhagavatam well. Otherwise, you won't know it. Otherwise, you're just reading a story and saying, oh, Akvira did this, Uddhava said this, or Abhari said this and all. But when you understand these Bhagavad Gita well, by these different things what Krishna is talking about, if you bring this into Bhagavatam and look at the personalities there, you will observe this, they acted in a differently than us, in many instances. How we would have acted and how they have acted were different. And the reason for that is this. The variation in the gunam that has happened there. So, he says here, what does dhruti means? Dhruti means, buddhi and dhruti, Krishna is talking about. Buddhi, he says here, dhruti means willpower, ichashakti, or willpower in us. He said, no, we have some willpower in us. Buddhi, what does that mean? Nishyalpiya buddhi. Nishyalpiya means that decision-making thing. Like mind, mind is sankalpa vikalpa. Thought waves are mind, isn't it? It's come through our mind. Sankalpa vikalpa comes. From there, we come to some decision. That this is the right thing to do in life. This is the way I should go in my life. Who makes that decision? That's buddhi. Nishchaya alpiya buddhi. And it is only when buddhi makes that decision, you can act properly. Suppose the buddhi has not made decision. Based on the mind, if you are functioning, you will do different things. Sometimes you think this is right, sometimes you think that's right. But if buddhi is in the right place, your decision will be firm. Your decision will be firm and determined. You'll have that strength of determination inside or willpower. In other words, dhruti depends on this buddhi. If buddhi is in the right place and if it is fixed there, then the dhruti will have a after effect, good after effect from that dhruti also. You'll understand that better. So, in the life, we all have some resolutions in our life, isn't it? This is the way I want to go in my life. Even though we may have some resolution in the beginning, when you are young, it changes. You started realizing from the experience in this world that I must change my way of life. I must go in a different direction. This is what benefits me. This is what's good for me. So you make a decision or resolution inside that this is how I want to live in this world. This is what I want to do in my life. What I want to do with my life. All these resolutions, we are making it. Not that we sit and make the resolution, but it comes like that to us. Is it not? It comes like that. So, I should do like this. And so, from there, all our emotional profiles, which come, is also after effect of that decision inside. You may or may not have made that decision in full awareness. But that decision is already there inside. So all your emotional profiles, what comes up later on, will be based on that. For example, suppose you have read Bhagavatam a lot, and you have read Bhagavad Gita a lot, and you had made some realization from that come to you. The immediate reaction from inside will be, I'm not going to bother too much about this world, because the world is not everything at the end. This life in this world. This little by little, it must create that understanding inside a vairagyam to this world and to the persons in this world. Somewhere inside, that resolution is making me conscious all the time that by living in this world, it's better that I look after my spiritual life rather than my material life. At some point in time, we will all come to know that, one way or the other. But in order to come to that point, Krishna is putting here that your life alone completely is controlled by that resolution inside. And that is important. That's important. We are not conscious of that. There is some decision inside every one of us which is making us to go after this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita or the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. Why? Because somewhere in a much subtle level inside, some decision has been made there which we are not conscious of. We are not conscious of that. That is why, irrespective of, you could spend this time doing something else as well. But why do you feel the necessity to hear Bhagavad Gita? Because there is somewhere inside, without your own knowledge, some subtle level, there is a conscious decision, but not fully aware of it, but there is a decision that's made inside that there is the truth in Bhagavad Gita, and that truth is the only truth. Because you are not feeling that effect of the truth from the world, from other people, or from anywhere else. It only comes from Bhagavad Gita. That is why Bhagavad Gita, hearing again and again, Bhagavad Gita, Kinchit Adhida, Gagar Janalava Kaniga Vida. Now that is what he says there, isn't it? Bhagavad Gita's power is that if it goes in, it will work. It cannot be thrown out from inside. If it goes in, it will, provided it has to go in first. If it goes in, it will work. You cannot throw it out. After all, the Absolute Truth is speaking. And He is speaking from the Absolute level. And no other level you can reach that state. Vyavaharam level, Pradivasiyam or Vyavaharigam, which means that in the relative platform or in the transactional platform, you won't get that experience of the Absolute Truth. So, for example, this is important because you understand this. There is this in the Devi Bhagavatam, mentions like this. Ya Devi Sarva Bhudeshu Buddhi Rubena Samstita Namastase 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 Namo Nama. Sometimes we say something to somebody, he is not listening or she is not listening. She is not listening. Because the reason for that is, in his or her, inside his or her, how Prakriti is present, and she has already decided in her or him that whether they should listen or not. You can say to him or her what you want to say, but whether he should listen or not, that Prakriti is in him or her also sitting there. And she has already decided there. Her buddhi and his buddhi, she has already gone and influenced that. And she has told him, no, don't take it. So no matter how logically you have presented it to them, people get baffled with this, isn't it, all the time. Sometimes you think two people are fighting or two countries are fighting each other for supremacy or the other. And both know that they are doing the wrong thing. Anywhere, Israel or Palestine or Russians and Ukraine or whatever kind of India, Pakistan, whatever you take. Both of them knows very well that this is not right, what's going on. It's not right. Russians know, Ukrainians also know. It's not right what's going on. And many of them are also aware that for ages there was no problems between the people. But suddenly this comes up. Why? Ya Devi Sarva Bhudeshu Buddhi Rupena Samstita. In one person, in buddhi form, she is dictating one thing. In another person, in the buddhi form, she is dictating exactly the opposite thing. So, how Devi has given that power to that. Here Devi is used the word because she is Prakriti. Material nature is in her control. Buddhi is a part of Prakriti. So she is in control. We won't use the word Krishna here. She is assistant to Krishna, but she is the direct controller of the situation. So unless that person inside agrees, only then she will have the desire to hear and develop that Shraddha to understand it better, isn't it? In fact, you can see, even if we have spoken everything, even Shravanam is not possible. Even Shravanam is not possible. Because a Devi, who is present inside, in the form of Buddhi, Ya Devi Sarva Bhudeshu Buddhi Rupena Samstita, that she has to give you that mercy from inside. Only then you will hear. Otherwise you won't hear. That is what Krishna also says here, but in a different way. Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenama Upayanti. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna puts it like that. Dadami Buddhi Yogandam. That Buddhi inside that. So, Krishna says that there is a connection with Buddhi. Buddhi is not brain, that you have to know. It's not brain we are talking about. Brain has nothing to do with it. It is this, that is why, in order to make that clear to us, it's not your brain. Because if it was brain, all these big scientists would have understood this before. Or all the big computer designers or whoever in the highly intelligent class, as we say. The material life, when we call intelligent, is the one who comes out with a lot of degrees and who does a lot of research and in Nobel Prizes and all that. That is not that Buddhi Krishna is talking about here. Therefore, what Krishna said was, in order to make it more clear, Krishna wanted to tell us what that Buddhi is, goodness, passion, ignorance, how these three things it works. Buddhi works. Otherwise, we won't understand. It's very easy to get misguided by this thing called intelligence. Very easy it is. To get carried away by intelligence. Everyone is saying, oh, highly intelligent, highly intelligent. What intelligence is there? As far as Krishna is concerned, Buddhi is this particular Nishchayalpiya Buddhi, which is not brain, it's not coming from the brain. It is something that he explains here, that first class Buddhi, second class Buddhi, third class Buddhi, based on the Sattvagunam, Rajogunam and Tamogunam. Let's look at that because it's important. Pravrtincha nivrtincha.
Pravrtincha nivrtincha.
Karya karye bhaya bhaye.
Karya karye bhaya bhaye.
Bandham mokshancha ye veti.
Bandham mokshancha ya veti.
Buddhisa partha sattviki.
Buddhisa partha sattviki.
Pravrtincha nivrtincha.
Pravrtincha nivrtincha.
Karya karye bhaya bhaye.
Karya karye bhaya bhaye.
Bandham mokshancha ya veti.
Bandham mokshancha.
Buddhi sapartha sattviki.
Buddhi sapartha sattviki.
That's it. Pravrtincha nivrtincha. Karya karye bhaya bhaye. Bandham moksham chaya veti. Buddhi sapartha sattviki. Krishna is saying, O son of Pratham, that understanding by which one knows what ought to be done and what ought not to be done, what is to be feared and what is not to be feared, what is binding and what is liberating, is in the mode of goodness. It's in the mode of goodness. From that translation itself, you can understand that it is not brain. What is referring to? What is referring to? Brain, what they are referring to in the modern world is how clever you are with your academic achievements or whatever that is, isn't it? So, first thing Krishna talks about pravrtincha nivrtincha, isn't it? Pravrti and nivrti, that we know what it means. Pravrti means karma marga. Pravrti. Through karma, you are getting, through progressing, through that. Through pravrti, how you come out from this entanglement. Nivrti means freedom from the, how you get released from this entanglement. Sannyasa marga. So, like bandham moksha, bondage and liberation, isn't it? So this verse is talking about karma sannyasa. Karma sannyasa. For example, we have to first know what is pravrti and nivrti properly in order to know this verse. So in the Bhashya also, Ajari mentions here, jividohi, he says here, Pravrtincha pravrtihi pravartanam bandhaheduhu karma margaha nivrtincha nivrtihi moksha heduhu sanyasa margaha bandha moksha samana vakyatval pravrti nivrti karma sanyasa margau idi avagamyate. That is what Krishna is saying here. In other words, that karma is also binding, is it not? Karma means binding. Karma is the one which binds us. So, karma margam is bondage. But if that person is not ready for jnanam or bhakti, then the only choice he has got is let him be in the karma margam, but let him make it karma yoga. That's the option for him. There's no other way. He is attached to karma. He can't come out of it. Because the urge is so strong inside. Karma vasana is so strong inside. If it is like that, his only option is karma yoga. to come out of that. And through Karma Yoga, he'll come to Bhakti or Jnanam and he will get progress further. That's there. So, Pravritti is called, Pravritti Margam is that. That through Karma also, you can come out through Karmam, 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 Viharam. In the Bhagavad it says like that. Karmana, Karmam, Viharam, it says. Using Karmam to come out of Karma. That's the thing. So, and the other one, Sannyasa Margam, which is transcendental knowledge, realization in that thing. Karya Kari Vihita Pradeshide, Kartavya Kartavya Karana Karane, Iti Eder, Kasya Desha Kala Avakshaya, Drishta Adrishta Thanam Karmana. Krishna is saying here, Karya means Kartavya or duties or what the actions we perform here based on the Shastra. That is that. And Karya Agarye, he says here, Pravutinja Dhutinja Karya Agarye. Akarya means that what is not allowed by the Shastra. What is allowed by the Shastram is Karyam. Not allowed by the Shastram is Akaryam. You can see everywhere Shastram is given the authority, not person. Shastram is given the authority. Iti yada, kasya desha kala vashya drishta drishta thanam karmana. So, you are engaged in karma and according to the time and place, drishta drishta thanam karma. Results will come. For example, a karma, when you execute here, when you execute another place, the results will be different, is it not? That you know, that you are doing the same karma here, and you are doing the same karma elsewhere. So that means based on the place and the time, it can change. The results can change. So that shows that karma phalam is not completely dependent, independent. Karma phalam is totally dependent on various factors. Desham, karam, patram, all other things are having effect on that. That's what Krishna says here also. That karmam very nature is like that. Now, Krishna's way of looking at things is totally different than the way we look at things. In the Yajna Skandam, Krishna mentions this in a nice way. He says to Uddhava, Uddhava, I'm giving you a lot of things, telling you what to do, what not to do. Don't hold on to any one thing and say, this is it. It may not work for you. It may work for somebody else. That's also there. That is why in the Vedic system alone, you will find so many ways in spiritual life. For this reason only. There is no one way clearly demarcated for everybody. It's not like that. Therefore, he is saying, Krishna says, how did these various ways come into existence? Krishna's question to Uddhava. How did they come into existence? It came into existence because at different times, different people have followed that path. And some people succeeded in that and it became a path. That's how it has become a path. You understand what I'm saying? That we are talking about different yoga processes now. Raja Yoga, Hatha Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, endless yoga systems, isn't it? Exist there. And how did all this come into existence? That's the point. Point is this. At different times, different people have used them and some of them found it worked for them. But not necessarily it will work for you. That's Krishna's point. It's not necessary that it will work for you. That you have to find it. All these options are there in front of you. And that's why Krishna won't one place say clearly, openly, that this is it. No. He will tell you all the things according to your subtle body, your mind, your intelligence, your ego. You got to modify your own inside. And develop it properly. That's you have to do it. Krishna is not going to do that. That's why everywhere instructions are given with this understanding. A lot of responsibility on our shoulder. Whereas we like it, everything offered on a plate, isn't it? That's why we love that. When there's a lot of instructions, 10 like commandments given to us, now we say, everything is so nice. Outside we don't want to hear anything. No, it won't work. It won't work. Because what works for you may not work for me. What works for me may not work for you. It's all different. Individually, you have to understand Krishna's statements properly first. That is why, Ekadasi Skandam, when Krishna has spoken, he made very clear to Uddhava, Uddhava, even while coming back to the spiritual world, you have to make it your own way. I'm not going to take you there. Because only then you have made it. If I take you there, it's easy, it's no problem. I can take you there, it's not a problem. But I prefer that you come back. With your own way, you progress in the spiritual life and come back to me. So that is also there. See, this you can apply in everything. Say for example, medical science has created so many medicines, isn't it? You must have seen this. Some of us have got similar diseases. Those medicines have worked for some people, or some people it didn't work. It didn't work. And there is no clear explanation from the doctors for that. It didn't work. Simply couldn't work. Or sometimes they'll say, oh, you've gone too advanced in the disease stage. That's why it's not working anymore. Cancer treatment, always it happens. So they'll say that you have got an advanced stage of cancer, therefore it's not working. Even if it was the early stage, it was not going to work. Just simply because that medicine has found, that is how the medicine was tested, isn't it? They will test it on 1,000 people or 5,000 people for a few years. And they must have found some benefit some places. Therefore say, oh, this is a new medicine. The drug manufacturer will say to the world that this is the medicine for that disease and this will work. And so NHS accept that and then it becomes a part of that and they'll use it for your treatment. But if you talk to the doctors there, you immediately understand that they are also not sure that that will work for you particularly. Because in your own body, what other complications are there, they are not totally aware of that. Who understands this body? Nobody understands this body. So these medicines and treatment and all other things what we do in this world, everything else is exactly the same way. Maya won't let you have a complete grip on anything. You will always observe that. You will develop some scientific knowledge now, tomorrow she will make sure that it's wrong and throw you out of balance completely. All your so-called... So Maya sometimes lets you have for some time some knowledge, but she will never allow you to have a total grip on any situation. That's why she is Maya. That's why she is Maya. So keeping that in the perspective, Krishna is saying this all the time, that even in spiritual life, because we are in Maya, we are not out of Maya. And while being in Maya also, our own spiritual life also, we need to know that where things are required, corrections, or changes required, that all has to come from Antaryami. He has to guide you at that point. And so only that way it will work. It will work. But unfortunately, in the modern way, it has become too much, how do you put it, in a very stereotyped way, we operate in spiritual life. But spiritual life is not stereotyped. Spiritual life is very individual thing that is. It cannot work otherwise. Cannot work otherwise. That is the important point. So, Bandham Mokshan Jaya Veti Buddhisa Partha Sattvini, Krishna is saying here also that Drishtya Kala Kala Vekshaya Drishtya Adrishtatranam Karmana. Karma will produce results based on various so many factors. So, therefore, don't put all your faith in all the results of the karma. There also you will miss it. You will lose it. Then you will lose your faith in the Shastram. Shastram is warning us not to put the faith in these things, because it's all happening in the periphery of Maya, within the periphery of Maya. And therefore, there is no absolute thing here when the results are coming. That is the point Krishna is making here. So, bhaya bhaye bandham mokshanchaya veti buddhisa partha sattvini. Bhaya bhaye vivedi asmalidi bhayam tad vivirinam abhayam. Bhayam cha abhayam cha bhaya bhaye drishtina adrishta vishayoho. Bhaya bhayoho karane ityartha. For example, there is two things, drishtam, adrishtam. Drishtam means known things. Adrishtam means unknown things. While making decisions also, you don't know everything about it, isn't it? You are making decisions based on the known data, what you have. Known understanding. There are so many unknown factors in that. So, drishta, adrishta, vishayoho. Therefore, drishtam and adrishtam is there, both you have to. And because it is like that, while engaging, making decisions, you have fear and you have fearlessness also. Both are there. Mixed emotions comes from that, because of that. Is it not? That making some major... So, for example, say you want to buy a house. You go in there. You're seeing the property. And house is one example. Like this, so many other things. In a small level or bigger level. And you are thinking about it. You collected a lot of information as much as you could from your estate agent, from the web, and wherever you could get. But sometimes you get a surprise in spite of all that. The person who has done your, what do they call it, the structural thing, surveyor, or he may have overlooked something. The solicitors may have overlooked something. And the after effect of all that is after the deal was all done. And then what do you do? So there are drishtam adrishtam things in everything in this world. And there is nothing you can do about it. In every decision what is made here, there is drishtam adrishtam. That is why Krishna is saying here that bhaya bhayo karane ityartha bandham sahedukam mokshan cha sahedukam ya veti vijanadi buddhihi sa partha satviki. So, but satvika buddhi, Krishna is saying here, is that buddhi which does not have these emotions, fear, satvika buddhi. You should not have that. Because what is there? In satvika buddhi, you know these things well. That you know how to operate in this world of maya. That means you will not think, get so attached to the result of that. If something goes wrong, you will know the reason behind that is maya has created that situation and able to live with that decision, whatever has gone wrong. Because there are a number of factors. When you are doing any transaction in this world, there is also your prarabdham behind it. So if prarabdham is there to get you into trouble, it will get you into trouble. You won't come out of it. And that you won't know at that time. Everything in this world is not a deal that you make and win the deal. That's the mode of the businessman, isn't it? He's thinking, I made this deal today, make another deal tomorrow. Krishna says that in that divine and demonic nature, isn't it? That words, if you look, you will see there. Na vidurasura. What is the next one? Kimanir kama hedugam. All that is an indication of that. Kimanir kama hedugam. For him, his world is like that. He is living in that world. Satyam apradishtande jagadahur anishwaram aparaspara sambhudam kimanir kama hedugam. He is saying this. This is most of the people are like this. In this world, big businessmen, big people in this world, it's things are like that. You have to laugh at it sometimes when you have understanding of these verses. You look at the world. Somebody fights somewhere, two countries are fighting. Immediately, the Secretary of State jumps into his plane to negotiate there. He goes there, and then for a few days, he runs around there. He goes back. Nothing has changed. Everything goes on as usual. So you can see these people, what is going through their head. It's all madness, if you say. That when you have no understanding of this side of spiritual life, Bhagavad-gita, whatever the human body is doing in this world is nothing but madness. That's what Krishna is saying. Asatyam apradishtamde jagadahur anishwaram aparaspara sambhudam kimanyer kamahedulam. Krishna is asking, what is madness is more than madness than this is. Because he does not know. That is why it is. And it's happening all the time. Regularly this is what's happening here. So after saying that, so tatra jnanam buddhe vrutihi buddhi tu buddhi madhi dhadi abhi vruti vishesha eva buddhehe. So knowledge and steadiness is a symptom of this sattvika buddhi. He is in knowledge and he is steady. That is a symptom of this sattvika buddhi. That's what Krishna is saying there. So, dimidohi vedoktohi dharmaha pravritti lakshanaha nivritti lakshanascha jagadaha sthiti karanam. So, Vedam has spoken about the dharma in two ways. Now, coming back to this verse, Krishna is saying here, that one who has got desire for liberation, freedom from this material life, and one who has taste for self-realization, knowledge, and who has got attachment to the knowledge of the self and self-realization, such a person, for them, Nurti Margam will suit them. Nurti Margam. But some others who have not matured that far, that desire has not come strongly inside, that I want to escape from this confused and chaotic situation where we are today, that desire has not come. I'm still feeling that I should adjust something here and trying to find some happiness in this world. What that is indicating is that the maturity hasn't come. Spiritually, he is not matured. If you are matured, what will happen is Murti Margam will come to him straight away. He will know that it's no point in trying to tinker here, tampering with the world here. It's not going to change. It is going to be like this, and to make it perfect is not possible. That realization has to come inside first. Only inside it has to happen. You can't put it on somebody from outside. That won't work. In his own way, by his own realization, he has to know this within, that it's no point in me running after this world and trying to change this world and perfect this world. It will not work. So if you have come to that state inside, if you have come to that resolution inside, then Murti Margam will work for him. That is what Krishna's point is. But those who have not come to that, who has not come to that matured stage, but he has got prarabdham to finish. Because the reason behind that is prarabdham. Prarabdham is still there haunting him. It's holding him back. For them, Prarabdha Margam will work. He has got prarabdham. He is not able to come out of it. And prarabdham will drag him still to engage in all sorts of activities in this world. And both of them are processes described in the Vedam. Vedam has recognized both these kind of people, both kinds of people. Because pravritti, when Krishna says here, is not the work what we do in this world. We have to know that. That we're going out and doing because we've got so much vasana inside. So we do all sorts of vikarmam here. That is not what pravritti Krishna is talking about. Pravritti means it's not that you run around all over the world to doing different things. What pravritti means is that these two processes, which is based on the Vedam, that means which Krishna has spoken, grihastha dharmam and sannyasa dharmam. It is in that way it is addressed here. One is a direct for liberation, moksha margam, and the other one favorable for moksha margam. For example, grihastha life is favorable for if you develop that grihastha life in a proper way, then it becomes a favorable for pravritti margam. Pravritti margam, you are making the progress then in the right direction. In household life, due to prarabdham, you are stuck in there and somewhere or the other. But still, doesn't mean that you have to give up. It's not to be given up. Still, you are saying there, Krishna is saying here also, that pravritti margam is due to prarabdham that is holding me back. Till that prarabdham is over, I don't want to create another further prarabdham for me. Instead, I act in such a way based on the rules of the grihastha ashram, and that by doing that way, I may come out of this one day. I will not be permanent. So, sometimes people say, they are very materialistic people, living a completely materialistic life, and they will say, we are in the pravritti margam. They say like that. Because you are working, going to factory, making money, doing business, this and that. So, we are following the pravritti margam, they will say. That is not pravritti margam. That is his own stupidity, what he is talking about. Pravritti margam is that margam, that process, whereby we follow the scripture injunctions and we also develop the proper knowledge of the Shastra and how to live in this world. But at the same time, we also know that there is prarabdham behind me. I am able to break away from that. Recognizing the prarabdham, living in this world under the shelter of Gita or Bhagavatam with that full knowledge and functioning in that way, completely dependent on Krishna. Pravritti means completely dependent on Krishna. And in that way, when it is executed, that means within the framework of karma, and he is executing framework of dharma, if he is executing the karma, that is pravritti marga. Only then it is pravritti marga. Completely dependent on Krishna, accepting that prarabdham is not leaving me, it is still there in me, and therefore I am stuck in this situation. But inside I have the desire to get released from here. But somehow or the other, I am able to, not able to leave it. That means there is prarabdham still there. And in that way, I am doing my business in this world, whatever I have to do, and living under the shelter of Krishna, under the shelter of dharma. In that is called the pravritti marga. Only then it is pravritti marga. And if you are executing karma in that way, that is pravritti marga. But when you are doing that, your mainstay is not there in the pravritti marga. Laugiyam or material activities, you may doing that, but and also you are sticking to your dharma, but main grip at that time also is more in your spiritual sadhana and in your spiritual life. The interest and all your decisions is always based on the sadhana you do and also on your daily spiritual progress. That means inside resolution is not on the pravritti. Pravritti, you are stuck in that. Therefore, you are recognizing that I am stuck in this family situation. I am not in a position to break away from there completely due to my prarabdham. That is what is keeping together. Few people together is only due to prarabdham. When the prarabdham is over, in a natural way it will break up. You don't have to break on your own. And that is the right thing to do also, to allow that to break up in that way. So Krishna's point is pravritti margam is that, recognizing that connection with others in this world and with the world. And so you can see this happening in different ways, sometimes due to parents, sometimes due to children, sometimes due to wife, or various levels this pravritti margam is necessary for the human society. Krishna won't say anything to upset that balance in the society. That is why when he talked about the sāna karma yogena yoginam, isn't it? Jnana yogena sankhyanam, karma yogena yoginam. Jnana yogena sankhyanam is the one for the pravritti marga. Karma yogena yoginam is the one for the pravritti marga. But these two are both spiritual, transcendental they are. Mundane materialist life you should not bring into this. The man in the Jnana Yogena Sankhyana means he should be going like a rocket in the spiritual path because of his realization inside, or self-realization as the goal. Karma Yogena Yoginam also is fully conscious all the time that spiritual realization, self-realization is the goal. And he is adjusting his karma in such a way so it does not hamper his progress in spiritual life. So that is what the important point. So therefore, because he is in the pravritti margam, still he is busy with his daily spiritual sadhana, whatever he has to do while studying Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, or daily anushthanam, whatever he has to do, sandhyavandanam, upasanam, and everything else what he has to do, always his approach is like that. He is fixed up in his daily spiritual activities, but karma he will still continue. And if you do that for the rest of the life in that way, everything offered to Krishna, the results, and dependent on some Krishna, and then it will become Navrti later. It will come to him. Pravrti ravi dhirasya, Navrti upajayade. Navrti ravi murkhasya, Pravrti bharadayini. It's a verse in the Ashtavakra Gita. It says like that. That a person who is courageous, even his pravrti will become Navrti in due course of time. And many jnanis also you can see in this world, that when they are after self-realization also, they were situated in that state, jnana-nishtha, that is called jnana-nishtha. So, situated in that jnana-nishtha, they have acted like this. They have acted like this. Why? Because for the sake of the world, benefit of the world, they will act like this. I've spoken about this before also, in the 11th canto, Ekadasha Skandam, one of the most famous commentaries on that is Ekanath Swami's commentary in Marathi language. It's been translated into all other languages as well. Eganatha Swami was a householder. And Janardana Swami, his spiritual master, was so dedicated to his spiritual master. If you read his life, you will see there that through him, this Warkari Sampradaya in Maharashtra, which came up later, and it is in that many great devotees have come, and he was a householder. But only thing is, you have to look at his householder life. Only then you see what kind of householder he was. He was a householder throughout his life, but the householder life, what he led, that's something worthwhile looking at because of the householder. Tukaram, who came in this Warkari Sampradaya. Warkari Sampradaya is still there. Thousands of people go to Vithala temple, walking long, long distances, singing, chanting the holy name, and singing these avans written by Tukaram and others. They travel through to this Pandapur temple, and many of those avans were written by Tukaram, who was not even educated. And he says there that he sat on the top of a mountain and he read this Eganatha Swami's commentary on Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 1,000 times. He read that 1,000 times. And we're not reading only, Anusandhana. Anusandhana means absorbing it. He said he read Ekadasha Skandam. Ekadasha Skandam's beauty is unlimited. It's endless it is. Even Sridhara Swami has been glorified for his commentary on Ekadasha. So Krishna's Ekadasha Skandam has been held in such high esteem. Vedantam is at its top level. That is what you find in the Ekadasha. In two chapters particularly, you will notice there, 13th and the 28th. In the Ekadasha Skandam. 13th chapter and the 28th chapter. If these two chapters, if you have absorbed, you don't have to know anything else in this world. You are back in the spiritual world. That's how potent these two chapters are. 13th and 28th. And they are the two most difficult in those in that canto. 13th and 28th. To read the verses is not difficult. To explain the meaning of the verses is also not difficult. But to get it across to somebody is most difficult. Those two chapters. So generally it is handled by people who have somewhat good realization on that. Otherwise they won't touch that. They avoid that two chapters. Because of the difficulty to get that, get it to others. The spirit behind that, unless you have that realization, it won't have its effect on the person who is listening. He will think, though, it's something I don't understand, I'll leave it behind. That's no good. If the other person is not getting it, then what's the benefit? So that's the point there. So he has read this Ekadasha Skandam 1,000 times. And he says here, that you don't have to know Sanskrit for this. That's not what Shastram says. Shastram says, if you hear from someone who has realized it, it is as good as hearing directly from the Shastram. So, Tukaram, although he was not educated, he used to read this Eganatha Swami's commentary on the Bhagavatam, and he has written them, all of them, in his avans. He is not even educated, but he has all the realizations in him. Where did that come from? It came from Eganatha Swami's avans, Eganatha Swami's commentary on Bhagavatam. His commentary on the Bhagavatam came in the form of avans through, in Marathi language, through Tukaram and many others later. So, all that what he realized from that Ekadasha Skandam commentary, so he wrote it in his own language, without losing the spirit behind it. So, that Eganatha Swami mentions there that in the Pravarti Dharmam, whatever one has to do, he did that throughout his life. Ekanath. He did that throughout his life. And at the same time, he was realizing Ekadasham inside. And he was living as a householder as well. So, as a devotee, Bhagavatam, he was a Bhagavatam himself, isn't it? And executing all the karma, what was required, and whatever difficulties he had in doing that, naturally, isn't it? When you read that their life in this world, these personalities like Tukaram and Namadeva and Edana, they went to fire in this world. So they tolerated all that, but at the same time they were liberated while they were here itself. So there is a, this Ekadashi commentary itself is nectar. Who? Ekanath Swami's commentary is a nectar. So in spite of that, he was knowing such higher levels of Vedantam, because Ekadasham is Vedantam on the top level, isn't it? In spite of all that, he still stayed in the Pravruti level, not in the Nirvruti. He didn't move on to the Nirvruti level. So, but what happened to him? Through that Pravruti process and through the Ekadasha Skandam's knowledge, in due course of time, he came to the Nirvruti level later. He comes to the Nirvruti level. That means completely dependence on Krishna and remaining as a householder. And even though he had to stay right in the middle of householder life, like a, they say, compare it like the lotus flower in the mud, the water. Water is full, muddy water. Right in the middle, like a lotus flower, he stayed like that. It is possible, he says, it's like that, isn't it? So, dependence on Krishna and self-realization is the important thing. Other thing like householder life or sannyasi life, all that is secondary thing. If there is no realization coming from Bhagavatam, and if Bhagavatam is not inspiring you in spiritual life, and that experience of Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatakyoyam, Pratyaksha Krishna Mayavati, means if you are studying Srimad Bhagavatam, and if you are not experiencing Krishna there in the Bhagavatam, then it is all waste of time. So, waste of time. So, therefore, Nivritti or Pravritti, that is not the important thing. The secret of Nivritti is this dependence on Krishna. That is the secret of Pravritti. So, because when the Nivritti comes to them, then they cannot do anything else after that. They cannot perform any more material activities. They can't do any more vyavaharam in this world once it comes to that Nivritti stage. And when everything leaves him and goes away, he becomes to the Nirvruti stage. He comes to the Nirvruti stage. Even if he wants to do anything, he can't do it. That stage comes to him. And that is why Tukaram's story, if you look, you have to look at Tukaram's story. And then you will see. Tukaram was a businessman. He was a businessman. And he was not educated spiritually very much. He was not educated. He was a shop owner. He had some grocery shop, and often he wanted to run the shop well, but he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it. And wife was getting upset with him all the time, because he was not very responsible, not making any profit in the shop. When devotees come, hands over everything free. He gave everything free, he was giving to the devotees. So naturally what will happen? Everybody will go there, isn't it? He had the maximum customers, but he was not making any money at the end. And while if devotees come, he will tell them to sit down and he will chant with them together. Sankirtan together. Bhajan, everything together, chanting the holy name. This was his life. And always in that state, in practical experience, how can you do business in this situation? So what can you do? At the same time, he couldn't close it down, the business, because family was there. So he has to show them that he is doing something for them. So that's how he was running his business. So he is a householder, so he has to do all these things. And while doing all these things, he was experiencing this also, weather-wise, there was a serious problem in Maharashtra at that time. There was a severe drought happened. It used to happen often in different places. Drought or an earthquake or a cyclone or a flood. floods or something. 1 year floods, next year drought. Or something like that. One of the other things will happen. So at the time when he was born, this was the situation. It was the drought conditions. And because of that, what was happening was that the businessmen become much more ruthless. What they used to say was, they will squeeze the water out of a stone. To that extent, they were greedy in their dealings with the people. And the businessmen, what they'll do, they'll give money, you know, what do they call it, the people borrow from them. Lend the money. They'll lend the money to people on a very, very high APR. APR is so high, so the interest rates are so high, that but poor people, if you are starving, what will you do? Give me whatever you can, they'll take it and go. Isn't it? You'll pay later. What can we do if you don't have, you are in a desperate situation. You will take it, won't you? That's the natural way. So, and it is in the middle of all this businessman that he was born. Tukaram was born in the middle of all these things. So, and they were parampara, like in so many generations, they were Varkaris. Because this Vishnu Swami, Egalajaskandam has spread all over. And this Varkari Sampradaya was existing there. And it is at that time this drought happened. And it is at that time, in one of this business family, Tukaram has come and taken birth. And by birth, it was not very good for him. Because these businessmen, who were the family members and all, they were like that. And, but Varkari, see, somehow or other, he came into contact with the Varkari devotees. At that time, Tukaram was thinking like that. And I looked at it, his own family has given so much money to lending it to so many people on a very high interest rate. Very high interest rate. And when this drought happened, he realized that it's not going to come back again. All that was given. So what he did was, he took out all that, what do they call in them, the excess, promissory note. Promissory note they call it. Promissory note. That means there was no registering or anything. On a piece of paper you write, I promise to pay so much after so much time with this interest rate. And you sign and then you witness it and then you hand it over. It was a system then. So he took, and this you will keep it yourself, the original. There was no making photocopies or anything then. It's different now, it's all done in a different way. Here, so he took out all of that promissory notes and he burned them or threw it away. And with that, his financial situation gone worse. No money left anymore. He became very poor. So, in that process, his first wife died. Because the situation became very unbearable. She died. And he got married again. Look at that prarabdham, Tukaram's prarabdham. He got married again. And then problems started again. The second wife, they used to call her Sahasranama. Sahasranama means he will abuse Tukaram 1,000 times a day with 1,000 different names. She will call it. So the refined way, they used to call her Sahasranama. Sahasranama normally is for glorifying Vishnu. Vishnu Sahasranama. But she was calling him 1,000 different bad words every day. Every day. She will chant these 1,000 names, abusing him. And he will listen to all that. So they used to call her, he used to call her, Sahasranama has come. And in a respectful way. But she won't let him go. She will call him like that. And so he wrote 13 abhangs. And all these abhangs, Tukaram is instructing his wife. But nothing was... he is telling her, don't get involved in this family life so much. You have seen what life is all about, how things can change in life. It can happen anywhere, isn't it? I mean, the drought happens and everything goes, whole situation changes. The so-called shelter of the money and the money in the bank, all this means nothing. It can go any moment. So she is telling her that don't take all this so seriously. Always try to engage in sadhana, engage in Krishna consciousness. Chant the holy name, Uttal's name, all these things he was speaking to her, but it was not going inside. And he is telling her, Krishna is present inside us, Atmarama, Sandaryami inside, and engage in the observing the Ekadashi. Such normal instructions what a householder would have done. He was instructing her in all these things. She is hearing to all this. She is hearing all these instructions, and she is saying to him, "Haven't you got anything else to do in life?" That's how she was. That's how she was. She says to him, "It's only me who knows how much I have to do. I'm struggling here, to working hard every day, and I'm preparing this food for you and giving it to you, and you're wandering around with your music, holding this, enjoying life nicely, comfortable you are situated. You don't understand. And you will know better if I stop this cooking food here. What will happen? Then you will realize all these things." So, Avatukaram won't care. He won't care. He will just smile. Because inside this understanding that this is all not worthwhile. So convinced inside that he wouldn't fall for it. So even though she abused him like that, she loved him still. In spite of the fact like that. So this Tukaram has become what Krishna calls it as Loga Bahya. Have you seen that word in the Bhagavad? In the, if you look into the Kavi Maharshi, while talking to the to me, he uses that word Loga Bahya. Loga Bahya means he's not in this world anymore. That's that word. Loga Bahya. Kavi Maharshi says that. It's an important verse. Shayo Margeshu Bhaktavadiya Bhagamani Janma Karmani Bhuyo Gayan Shemani Namani Abhidudu Bhayanam Pradudam Pradudalpa Udyadasa Kadajil Kobi Jabiritan Kobi Gerdzan Pragayan Unmadiva Pramurthyan Ai Kuyu Garunam Loka Bahis Chayo. The same word Nilpatur used in Narayanam in this way. In the Bhagavadam, that verse comes there that Loka Bahya. That is an important word. That Loka Bahya is these devotees. They are Loka Bahyas. Loka Bahya means they have no connection with this world. They have finished the connection with the world. They are in this world. The connection is broken with the world. Unmadavan Mrtyadi Loka Bahya. Bhagavatam says. Unmadavan Mrtyadi. Yeah. 40. 11-40. Evam Vrata Sapriya Namakritya. Jadanurago Dudajitta Muchaihi Kasatya Do Rodi Diraudigayan Unmadavan Matyadi Loka Bahya. That was. That Loka Bahya. Loka Bahya means he's not in this world anymore. You can't tie him down to this world. He's gone out of this world. So she knew that this person is no point in telling him anymore anything. Because otherwise, every day, suppose you are abused 1,000 words every day, and for a year, I don't think you could stand that anymore after that, is it not? So, normally, once you have become Loka Bahya, then this situation is that Krishna will come to help. But you have to become Loka Bahya first, only in that situation. So, and Krishna will summon somebody to help at that time. And although she was abusing him like this, she will do everything what was required for him. What was required for him. And he will forget everything, he will go to the mountain and sit on top of the mountain, sitting there and chanting there, or singing bhajans there. And for 2 or 3 days, he will get completely absorbed in the in Krishna's pastimes and Krishna's instructions and everything in relationship with Krishna. Tukaram could not remember anything. He was completely outside this world. Nothing was bothering him. But and at home, the children wanted the father to be there. He had children as well. But they won't be there. So, children were so attached to that. So, mother, she used to make all the food for the children and then walk all the way, preparing prasadam for him, walk all the way from home to the top of the mountain and give it to Tukaram at the mountain. In spite of all this sarsanavam she did to him. So that shows that inside she had the affection for him. Otherwise she would have done that. And not only that, you can see this, how it works. That when Tukaram has become Loka Bahya, Krishna has made sure the wife will behave in this way with him. So that, otherwise how could it be this could happen? In this today's world, will that happen?
If you don't try them, the next day they will.
And she won't eat till she has given the chapati and sabji to him. Chapati and sabji to him. And she will go there, and after going there with all this prasadam, she will do a sahasranam first. And then she will hand over to him everything. So, and that's another story, what how she used to deal with him. You see, she's not able to come out of his influence because of the his situation like that. And in spite of all the effort she used to take to go there with the prasadam, and even before giving prasadam, she will fire it all possible ways and then hand over the prasadam, make sure and make sure that he is fed well. And in that process, while walking towards the mountain, a very heavy thorn got into her feet, and she couldn't walk. And devotees say that Krishna came there at that time, like a young boy, and took away that thorn from his feet and put some medicines there. And Krishna was more concerned about her than Tukaram himself. So therefore, Krishna will do some things like that, in situations like that. And for her purpose, Krishna has gone and taken away from her feet the thorn, what has got inside. So, in spite of all the problems, he couldn't do any business anymore. Tukaram couldn't do any business anymore. And at the same time, he was handing over everything what was in the shop to people who had come there. How can you do business in that way? It has all come to an end very soon. It has all come to an end. So, this type of devotees are there that you can't recognize. You will notice them, and you will see this with all the great personalities. There were devotees like this, along with them. And they were by nature, due to their realization inside, they have moved out of this world. They are not in this world anymore. Unmadavan nityadi yoga bahya. Evam namajirate, chanting the holy name and dancing. And aniragam dhrudhachitta uchaihi. That their attachment to Krishna is so strong that they cannot have any material thoughts anymore. And not only that, what he is saying is there is unmadavan nityadi. Sometimes they will sing and dance. Loka bahya. They've gone out of the world. Now, seeing that, if we do like that, it won't happen. You have to come to that, inside that change has to happen first. Just because we have danced on the street, or we have sung the kirtan, doesn't mean that we are loka bahya. Loka bahya is an internal thing. It's not an external thing. Internally, they have become loka bahya. Therefore, it is after that, this way of life comes to them. So you can't imitate that. It will not work. It will not work. In many great personalities, there were such devotees. There is one incident mentioned about Ramana Maharshi's case. There was one school teacher, Sundareshaya, his name was TKS, they used to call him. And he was a personality like this. And he was a householder. Grahastha he was. And householder life was really a painful life. It was a very painful life. And at the same time, he was a devotee, Ramchandra's devotee he was. Even though he was a householder, he lived a life that he didn't know about this world. To such extent he was attached to Ramchandra. And at an early age in life, they say that he had a darshan of Ramchandra. And therefore, at the age of 9, he came to this ashram. At the age of 9, he comes to this ashram in Tirunavarai. And Virupaksha Guha, he went there. And there he saw Rama Maharshi sitting there. And he used to say that, we never thought that he was a human being. And so he appeared as though that a deity has been carved and kept there in gold. It looked like that for him. That is his observation at the age of 9 when he saw Maharshi sitting there. So, at that time, what used to happen was, this Karanda Ashram and all didn't exist there. Maharshi used to sleep in the Virupaksha Guha. So, if you go to Tirunavarai, you will see there, children used to come up in that mountain. Trinamalai was known well at that time. So they used to come to Vivashaguha. And when they come there, they used to experience a certain spiritual feeling. They will sit and come and sit in front of Maharshi peacefully, without saying one word. Children are generally restless, aren't they, in a small age. But there, once they come there, in front of him, they became very peaceful. And they used to sit there, cross-legged, in front of him, looking at him. This was their way they passed their time. Many, many children used to do that. They used to say that he appeared like the burnished gold in that way. So this TKS or TKSIR as he was called, that he was educated well. At the early age, in them days, Brahmas were educated in chanting the Vedam. So he had Veda Dhyanam. Vedam he has studied. Not only that, Veda Bhashyam he has studied also. Because there were, at that those days, education means spiritual education. Not sending to school or college and educate. They were generally don't, they didn't do it. Only it started little by little later. Initially, Brahmana families, they wouldn't send them to university or college. For them, education means spiritual education. Studying Shastram, first to study the Vedam, it takes its own time. Then you have to study the Bhashyam, commentary from the Acharyas. That means you have to go to a specialist who has studied. So, Kavikana Ramani, who was generally called as KKG, we call it, Kavya Ranganavari. So KKG was a well-known scholar. So Sundaresha went to him to study Veda Bhashyam from him. And after all that, you need some livelihood also to maintain the body. So he got the job of school teacher. The school teacher is a normal job they loved because it's only teaching and a few hours and you can escape from that. Income was not very good. It was very, very small. But those days, talking about 70, 80 years ago, his salary was 3 rupees. 3 rupees salary. And when he gets his salary, on the way home, somebody begs for something, he will give that to them. From this 3 rupees, whatever he had. So when he gets home, the wife will naturally get upset. Isn't it? Those days there was not many much employment. Nowadays it is so different, isn't it? He is so different world. But what happened to him was that the relationship was in a very serious struggle between them. So all these great devotees, Bhagavatas in other words, all of them are a proof of these things what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. So, because if you listen to Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, this is how you will end up. This is how you will end up. And their life is hard. Their life is hard. No money to live in this world. And more than that, depending on them and who are running the family, their life is very hard. Isn't it? The wife's life will be very difficult because they are depending on this kind of people as husbands who won't earn anything. And who won't provide anything. And the wife has to run the house, isn't it? So, because that is why they are called these Lokabahiyas, are not very something everybody will easily want to be. But in spiritual life, we have to see this also, that every great personality is Lokabahiyas. They are not in this world. Shreyomargeshu. Shreyomarga means for the Shreyasa. For auspiciousness. Bhaktavadiya Bahumani. That devotee knows very well that bhakti is a process for shayasa. Janma karmani bhuyo gayam kshemani. By absorbing in Krishna's birth and Krishna's pastimes and listening to Srimad Bhagavatam, pradrudam pradrudalpam, that very easily you can become a Lokabahya. If you get absorbed in this, this is something you have to observe in people. For example, wherever there is Srimad Bhagavatam in a massive scale going on, and if you observe some people are there every day, morning to night, listening to Bhagavatam. Why is that? Because inside them, due to the association with Bhagavatam, a very high degree of vairagyam has come. And they are not able to take material life any more seriously. They have become helpless. That is what Krishna is saying here. Chayo morgeshu bhaktavadiga bhumani ജന്മകർമ്മണി ഭൂയോഗായം ക്ഷേമാണി നാമാനി അഭിതതു ഭയദം പ്രദ്രുതം പ്രദ്രുതാത്മാം. If it becomes to a higher degree, if it exceeds a certain degree, then he has more or less settled in his new state of consciousness. Sometimes in his ecstasy he is crying, or sometimes in his ecstasy he is smiling. Kwabi garjan pragayan. Sometimes he is roaring with happiness inside. Kwabi garjan pragayan. Unnadimal pranartyan. That because of this intoxication inside, he is drunk this nectar of Krishna consciousness. When he is feeling that so strongly inside, is completely driven by that. Therefore, unnadiva pranartyan. Sometimes he is dancing in that ecstasy. Aivirugarunam lokabahyaschaneyam. Then after that, he is just living in this world and moving through this world. He is on his way out, escaping from this world. And seeing that person, Krishna is saying, you can know that he is on his way out from the prakriti. He is escaping from the prakriti. When we leave, we don't leave like that, isn't it? We leave how? We leave making our arrangements so that we don't want to leave, basically. But they want to go. They are on their way out. And all other things around him, already they are liberated. That's the point Krishna is making here. Already they are liberated. So, Logavahya, that is the important word. The Logavahya Shareyam, they are moving in this world in that Logavahya state. So, even though you are in the Pravruti Margam, Nivruti. Even in the Pravruti stage, you are in the Nivruti state. They are all in the Pravruti stage. Quran was in the Pravruti stage. But is in the Nivruti level. Nivruti level. So, so even if you are in the Nivruti stage, they were in the Pravruti. There are many Mahalpas like that. They were in the Nivruti stage. But they lived in this world in a balanced way in Pravruti. Means that, like people like Tukaram and so many other devotees, who are in the Nivruti stage, Pravruti stage, but they were in the Nivruti level. Then there are people who are in the Nivruti level, but they are living in the Pravruti way. That also is there. That also you have to look into it, both. So that is why it is not very black and white, these things. Clear cut, you can't say. Those who are experience of these devotees, who are like this, they are householders, which means they are in the Pravruti level. They are established as Pravruti level. But in consciousness they are in the Nivruti stage. And then there are others, like Ramamashi and all, they are in the Nivruti stage. But they will be in the Pravruti level, doing things in this world. For the sake of the world. They will still act in it. They will do Vyavaharam also. They will go to kitchen, cook, make sabjis and vegetables, everything. They will serve prasadam to others. They will look after the plants and the trees and the animals in their own vicinity, whoever is present there, they'll feed all of them. That's all Pravruti. But even in the Nivruti level, they could execute their Pravruti. And similarly, even in their Pravruti level, they could stay in the Nivruti. These things we have to possibly recognize this. So, why Ekananda Swami, for example, he knew very well what is the secret of Pravruti. That's what it means. If Krishna has put in a situation like that, how to make that Pravruti into Nivruti, also they knew that. This is the secret. How to make the Pravruti into Nivruti. Nivruti is the goal, ultimately. You want to be Nivruti. Nivruti has to happen. So this capacity to turn Pravruti into Nivruti is called Buddhi. You see, we are talking about Buddhi now. So do you understand Buddhi? To make this Pravruti into Nivruti, capacity to do that, that is called Buddhi. So this Buddhi is different, isn't it? This is a different kind of Buddhi. So Krishna's Buddhi is this. When Krishna is referring to Buddhi, the Dadami Buddhi Yogandam Yenama Upayandiri means that you have been thrown into this material existence, samsaram or whatever we call it. And here you are a householder, brahmachari, sannyasi, no matter what it is. In spite of whatever situation you have been thrown into, whatever life you have to lead in this world, in spite of all that, inside, through knowledge, renunciation, and surrender to Krishna, if you turn that life around and develop Bhakti from that, that intelligence, if you have that, that's called Buddhi. That's called Buddhi. Nadami Buddhi Yogantam Yenamam Vayandide Yenamam Vayandide. Krishna is saying like that, isn't it? So that Buddhi, this definition, that is the way it has to be understood. So here, unfortunately, what's happening now in the world is people are making Nivrti into Pravrti. It's exactly opposite. Suppose somehow Krishna has given you some Nivrti from within, but you will make it Pravrti. That is where we are now. Instead of escaping from this, chaining that into Nivrti. Suppose Krishna has given us some capacity to do some things. Instead of utilizing for Krishna's pleasure or satisfying Krishna's needs or Krishna's glory, we engage in all signs of developing this, developing that. That means Nivrti opportunity Krishna has given, but we make it as Pravrti. We make it as Pravrti. So, and that is why we say, isn't it? And they use Bhagavad Gita for that. Bhagavad Gita for business management. You know that, huh? That they do. So, what they are saying is, if you study Bhagavad Gita very well, what can you do? You can improve your business. See? Business development. And you can make a lot of money. You can make a lot of money. What's the use of studying all this Vedanta? What benefit will you get from that? Therefore, in order to strengthen your material life further, they are looking for opportunity. And they will use Bhagavad Gita for that purpose. Just like the water from Ganga River has the capacity to purify. But if you start using that for cleaning the toilets, then what will happen? Similarly, instead of destroying this material existence in the knowledge of the self, that's what is expected. Instead of destroying the material existence in the knowledge of the self, we bring this knowledge and dissolve it in the world. Dissolving it in the world. That's what's happening. That the purpose of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, all that is to use that knowledge and to free the knowledge from the materialistic way of life and to free ourselves from that material existence. And instead of freeing yourself from the effect of the influence of material life, and to come out for which you require the knowledge what Krishna has given in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. Instead, we bring that knowledge and mix it in the world and make it a mess of the whole thing. So that is where Buddhi has gone. Buddhi has lost it. And because you know nothing is permanent here, and whatever you have achieved here, any big position or power or name or fame or wealth, whatever it is, it will all go. It will all go. It will not stay. And it is only for this reason. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the ninth canto was spoken. Only to get this idea across to us. That to tell us that why so many stories are spoken of so many kings there. You know that in the Bhagavatam, the ninth canto. This king, his son, his son, his son. Like a train is going, isn't it? Talsada, 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 talsada. It keeps on saying like that. If you read verses, you will see as though a train is going on its track. That's the way it's spoken. So, the idea behind that is, reason is only this. Sridhar Swami says there, Sridharajari Swami's commentary on that. Why all this history? What benefit did Parishad has got at the time he's leaving this body to know the whole history of all the kings who have come and who have gone from here? No, Sridhar Swami says there's a reason behind it. Sridhar Swami's opinion is that to tell us that they are also dead and gone from here. They also couldn't stay here. So, but only some of them, those kings who are mentioned there, they were pure devotees, Bhagavadams. Ambarish Maharaj, for example. And similarly, Mandhadav. And Saubhari story mentioned there. Yeah, Mujunda, one other one mentioned there. So, and later on, Mujunda story is ninth as well as the tenth. Only to tell us, some of them were intelligent. They had a good buddhi inside and they have escaped. Mujunda, Ambarish, Shibi, a lot of names you will find there. And why is important? Because they also had to go. They also had to go. Nobody could stay here. So, therefore, because these few kings whose names are mentioned there, like Ambarish, like Mujunda and others, and therefore they escaped because they were devotees. They have escaped. They took the knowledge. They were great kings. They had big empire and kingdom and all that. But they escaped because they had this buddhi, right? Buddhi in the right place. Therefore they escaped there. Now you can see their time has gone long ago. Now since then so many empires have come. Roman Empire had come. Finished, gone. British Empire was there. Finished, gone. Is it gone? So it is going on all the time. And what is left behind is now there is a lot of buildings and stones. That's all what remains at the moment. Isn't it? So even look at Krishna showing to us that Dwaraka Krishna has built. That's also gone. Is it not? Underneath the water. So, and the one in the sea. So Krishna says here, what remains in this world? Only two things remain. What's that? Krishna's Bhagavad Gita is remaining. Krishna's Bhagavatam is remaining. Everything else is gone. Everything else is gone. This is the truth. Only when Uddhava asks Krishna, what's going to happen to the future generations? I left behind Srimad Bhagavatam for them and Bhagavad Gita. Those who want to take advantage. But apart from that, Krishna didn't value anything else, including Dwaraka, including his own family members, the Yadavas. He didn't say, oh, I should have another few hundred generations after me through the Yadavas. No, they also go. They should also go. That is the very nature of Pragati. Recognizing Pragati's nature, nothing will stay here. So therefore, in order to doing anything else in this world, big palaces, they have also gone from here, isn't it? So many palaces have been built here. You can see different empires. Many countries. You go to Austria, you will see the Ottoman Empire and their palaces, what is built in Hungary and Austria together. They built a huge empire at that time. Roman Empire, palaces are still lying there. Is it not? Now Buckingham Palace is still here. So like this, only buildings remain, but everything else has gone, and many instances people are frightened to go to near these palaces because a lot of suicides and murder has happened in many of these places through the history of historical documents. If you look, you will see there in many of these royal families there were so many for power, for throne, infighting inside the family members, and in that process many personalities are brutally murdered, and their subtle bodies and their spirits are still around, and therefore people are even frightened to go there. Even in the Makiranga manner, they used to say this. When they moved in first time in 73, there were ghosts in the manor. And because a lot of things have happened there, must have happened, according to the people who lived there, according to their nature. And similarly, it is true with the royal palaces also. Prabhupada used to say at that time to the devotees, many devotees have mentioned this to Prabhupada that they were haunted by the ghosts. Prabhupada told them to chant Hare Krishna and that way they will feel protected. This was always spoken at that time. So, here, so many stories anyway, that's not the important thing. What's the point in building a huge one, huge empire, huge building? Bhagavatam mentions this in a nice way. If you look into the fourth canto, you will see there that how Bhagavatam sees that. If you look into the fourth canto, verse 22, chapter, and verse number is 11. Vyalaya druma vaite appiri tahila sambada yagraha tirthavadiyam. That is the verse. See that verse? Vyalalaya druma vaite apyarikta ghila sambada. Prabhu Maharaj is saying this. Yad graha tirtha vadiyam pada tirtha vivarjidaha. Pada tirtha vivarjidaha. Vyalalaya druma. He says here. Prabhu Maharaj says here. Wherever there is no chanting of the holy name, bhakti, Krishna consciousness, those places are even though they are palaces with a large amount of wealth stored there, it is simply to be considered like a Vyalayatma means this cobra. Cobra's hole. What do they call it? Where snakes are holes, where they take their, where they live, isn't it? Underneath the tree, sometimes you see some deep hole inside. And cobras, they make the hole and they live inside. And, or the rats make them, cobras goes inside, eat them and they live there. So, that is what Padmaraj is saying there. That,
Vyavalayadruma vaiti apyadik akhila sambadaha
where there is no Krishna consciousness, where is no bhakti, where is no jnanam, knowledge, where is no Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. Even if it is a palace with a lot of wealth, it is to be compared to the cobra's hole. It's not much different than that. Because why? If you put the hand inside, the cobra will bite you. So pravritti, nivritti, and or Bhagavata Dharmam or Gita Dharmam is telling us these things. It is explaining to us. So, one who has the proper intelligence, he knows very well that pravritti is meant for, it will give him the right understanding that to act in the proper way in this world. In other words, by executing pravritti, he will be able to free himself by engaging in a dharmic way. His pravritti will free him from the bondage. And nivritti will induce him to engage in activities which are to free himself from those activities which are forbidden, adharma, in other words. And he will know this properly while engaging in spiritual life. And he has to know which one has to be given up and which one has to be taken on board. Which one has to be taken on board. So that capacity to understand what is pravritti, nivritti, that requires some development inside, spiritual development, isn't it? What we have to give up is ignorance from inside. Not give up sadhyavandanam, anushtanam, sadhana and all that. That's not what is to be given up. What is to be given up is the ajnanam or ignorance inside. And, or not to give up a disciplined life. That is not what is to be given up. Because sometimes we can notice this in people. If you're a little bit observant, you will observe these things in people's life. And you have to come to some understanding about that. What it says is there, that a disciplined life is necessary for spiritual life. In a disciplined way to live, structure your own life, waking up at a particular time, sleeping at a particular time, and not to fall into the tamogunam in a large level, large scale, and controlling the diet and sleep for that purpose, and other similarly contact and association with other people as well. Some kind of restrictions on these things. So that means you are structuring your life in a disciplined way to make that endeavor, to make that progress, that is controlling your pravritti for the sake of nivritti. For the sake of nivritti. And with the knowledge behind it, backing up from the knowledge, and that nishta or steadiness in life. In whatever way it is, nishta is necessary. One should not wander around in the world. That's hippie nature. You can't use that for the sake of spiritual life. Spiritual life does not happen that way. Then we may find many excuses to wander around all over in this world. And that is detrimental for nishta. That's detrimental for nishta. And that means you are not controlled by any law. Always living a life of, in a loose way, wandering around everywhere and not able to control, discipline your own mind and body, naturally this will have its effect on you. It will not go away. That is why Krishna is saying that wandering nature is not very conducive for spiritual life. So, when that discipline what's necessary for disciplining oneself in life, that's pravrti, because that pravrti, in living in that way, it helps you to free yourself from this mess, where we are in. And that is called nirvrti. So normally, you know, there's a misunderstanding among people that I must have the freedom to do what I want. I'll do what I like, I'll get up when I want, I will travel to such and such a place when I like because I've got the money to travel, and I will do things the way I like it. That's not spiritual life. That's not spiritual life. Because without any rules attached to yourself. So therefore, in Shastram what they say is that the most free person, the person who is maximum free, he will be able to stay in the most difficult roles, within the framework of the roles. He'll be able to live within that. The one who is maximum free, he will be able to live within the maximum framework of roles, framework of the resource. Because discipline is pravrti. Discipline is pravrti. And freedom is nivrti. Freedom is nivrti. Freedom, wherever it is there, where is the freedom? Freedom is that within the framework of upadhi. We have upadhis, isn't it? Body, mind, intelligence and ego and everything. So, actual freedom is able to come out of your upadhi. Nivrti from the upadhi is called freedom. Not the way we interpret freedom these days. Nowadays we interpret what? We think freedom means, oh, I should have a complete freedom to do what I like. Is it not? And sometimes we take it in this wrong way. In that way we think that that is freedom actually. No. Shastram is saying to us, real freedom is, you are able to stay within your upadhi. That means without disturbing the upadhis. Body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, everything. And able to live in that way, without getting affected by that, and able to free yourself from that. Freedom from the body, freedom from the mind, freedom from the intelligence, freedom from the ego, that is all considered to be nivrti from the Shastra. Because our dharma we have to do, what we have to do here. And our pravrti, whatever it is, whatever pravrti it may be, in the best pravrti, two things will come out from this. First thing, if you do nivrti in this way, in your pravrti, well, first thing is that you will develop an austere nature within. Austerity will come. And also, you will make your livelihood in that process. Your livelihood also will come out in that way. Mainly, this is important principle, because especially for the young people, but they won't understand that. It's difficult to get the point across, because they're not, that maturity hasn't come. But principle doesn't go wrong. Principle is right. Principle is this, that even if you are thrown into a situation, even if it is pravrti, you are pulled into pravrti, knowing very well to execute that pravrti without, if it is creating a certain degree of austerity inside, and also it is giving you a way of life in this world, that itself is a nivrti for you. That itself is a nivrti for you. Because dharma is saying to us, that what is livelihood means? Livelihood means, so for example, livelihood means I am doing something for somebody and in return he is giving me something to maintain my body. Whether it happens in a personal level or in an institutional level or any other level, it doesn't matter. You are offering some service to somebody or work towards you and engage in some labor you are doing, and in return they are giving something, you get back something for maintaining your own body, isn't it? And that we need that, and you can't deny that. At the same time, the time what has happened now is that life has become completely maintaining the body in the modern situations, isn't it? And body is asat. Body is asat. Now in Sanskrit the word is jivanam and upajivanam. Jivanam is living, life. Upajivanam is maintenance. Maintenance of life. That is upajivanam. So, life should be jivanam, not upajivanam. If it becomes upajivanam, it becomes body maintenance. And upajivanam, also should not become an obstacle in your spiritual path. In your spiritual path, cultivation of bhakti, saranga, jnanam, all other sadhana what you have to do in life, it should not become a block in that process. So, so unfortunately what it changes, because generally you can see, in the modern days when you accept service in any institution, banks or in industry or factory or in offices or anywhere, it doesn't matter. Anywhere, depending on that, they will issue instructions to you and you are supposed to, they expect you to listen to that, isn't it? So, therefore, it becomes a problem that. But in some countries you can see, like in the Middle East, for example, they are very particular about that. They are able to hold on to that. They say that Saturday is no working. Mm-hmm. And they made it as a holiday for them. And that part side of it, they are doing the right thing. That they are able to hold on to that principle as it is, isn't it? Because it's a question of recognizing that they have an obligation towards the Creator and who maintains them. And it's not that we have to become like that, but what it's saying is that that dedication and commitment to the truth above their own bodily maintenance is considered important by them, isn't it? So, similarly, rishis have given us a way of life to live in this world. And if we ignore that, because I'm working in the industry or the factory or elsewhere, doesn't matter where it is, and the management is dictating so many things to me, that their way of managing is like this, I have to get along with it, and to please the management and the other bosses who are present there, we throw away everything and accept that way of life, then you are gone, completely lost it, completely lost it. And that is where extra care is required to protect yourself from that degradation to happen. Rishis have told us that you have to wake up in the morning, early morning, and you should sleep at night. And you should sleep at night. But what's happening now? Because of the modern arranged way of life, many people are forced to work at night. And they have to sleep during the day. They have to sleep during the day. Everything gets totally unbalanced in that way. So, and it automatically affects their work, anushtanam, sadhyavanam, everything. So rishis did not tell us all these things to control us. Because what they're trying to tell us is that based on the way the nature is functioning in this world, looking at the nature, they thought about that very deeply and they picked up what is conducive for spiritual progress. And they have told us, if you look into Ayurvedic texts, Ashtanga Hridayam for example, it will mention there that, that they are saying there that all these good things, what the rishis have spoken to us, it is given, say, with this understanding that the person who is being given the medicine, when the medicine is given to him, then it's not that you require all these medicines. Not that you require all these medicines. What you actually require is agreement with the way of the nature. To live in this world with the nature. And their point is, you don't need this medicine if you are living a life like that. The natural way you will get cured from the illnesses. And if you are not living with the nature, then even if you take these medicines, it's not going to benefit. In Ashtanga Hridayam, written by Vagrachaya, he mentions in the beginning like this. He was the greatest authority on Ayurveda. And he mentions like this, that if you are not living your life on a way nature has created us, which the rishis have spoken to us, waking up in the morning, and the daily nishtha, what they have made a way of life for us, isn't it? So many things where you are allowed and not allowed. And if you are not following that, completely against the nature you are living in this world, then whatever you may do, even if Ayurveda cannot help you there. That's the point. So looking at the prakriti, material nature, and living in this world based according to the prakriti, that is the first important principle. And we are making ourselves in this way that, oh, if you live in the natural way, you are living according to the prakriti, so you are very aborigines, or we call them like that, isn't it? Or tribal people or something like that. In fact, they live the right life. They are more in tune with the Prakriti. They are more in tune with the Prakriti. And when you lose that relationship with the Prakriti, sambandha, the relationship is broken. That is the reason why we are not able to understand Prakriti and Navati today. The reason why we are caught up in this situation, people are finding it difficult, is because of this disconnection from the Prakriti. So when we break up from the Prakriti, Prakriti and Navati understanding also has gone along with that. And that is the disaster effect. Based on sattva, rajasa, tamasa, based on the three material modes of nature, it develops in three forms, buddhi and the vridhi. And saying to Arjuna, Arjuna listen to that carefully. And first thing he spoke about this, which one? Sattva buddhi. Buddhi in the sattva mode. So that's what we are looking at. So, as I mentioned this before we broke up, that Prakriti, if you have no contact with the Prakriti, then you are free, isn't it? No sambandha with the Prakriti. we ourselves say that it's very interesting this. When we analyze others in this world, other cultures, other civilizations and other nations, generally we have a tendency, oh, those people are not developed, not prakritam in the Sanskrit, if you call it, it's called prakritam. Prakritam means less developed. But Krishna's way is, Krishna's point is, you are got so entangled in the Prakriti, and you are saying you are developed. If you come out of Prakriti, Krishna will say you are developed. But if you are so entangled in the Prakriti, 24 hours working, day and night working, and trying to live in this world, maintain this body, just for living in this world, for the sake of just maintaining this body, Krishna says, I have to call you more as Prakritam. Do you know what I'm saying? That when you are relieved of, the word in Sanskrit is Prakritam. Prakritam means one who is under the grip of Prakriti. So in Krishna's eyes, those who are very advanced and developed in the material side of life, they are the most Prakritas. Because you have so much control by the Prakriti in every level, is it not? Your life is so controlled by the Prakriti, you are not free from the Prakriti, so you are the most Prakrita one. Most Prakrita one. So, those who knows what is Prakriti properly, and what who knows how to have nivritti from Prakriti, and engaging in pravritti in that way to get that nivritti from Prakriti, that is what Krishna is calling here as kaya cha kaya kaya bhaya bhaye. That kaya kaya, that is what it is. Kaya kaya. Kaya kaya bhaya bhaye. Because, point is, kaya kaya bhaya bhaye is connected. If you say, do things what is kaya, abhayam will be there. Fearlessness will be there. Fearlessness will be there. If you do the akaya, bhayam will be there. You see? Spiritual progress is always inside what is happening there, inside all of us. You know, you can't limit it to throw it away to outside, but this you have to observe with your keen way of observation of people who are going in the spiritual direction. And you will notice these things in them. That is how you sense, detect that. You sense these things. Kaya kaya bhaya bhaye. It's not that I studied that words and understood the meaning of the words. That's not the purpose. Purpose is that in your own spiritual life, if this is developing, this understanding, that from kāryam comes abhayam, and from akāryam comes bhayam. That means they have got their discrimination in their life, what to do and what not to do. That stage has come to them, even though they are stuck in the prarabdham in this world. That fine discrimination inside, that what is the right thing to do. And they are saying here, Krishna is saying there, if you do the kāryam, you will have abhayam, fearlessness. If you do the akāryam, you will always have the fear. You will always have the fear. So to such an extent, that fineness is required inside. Certain things if you do in this world, definitely it will create fear inside, isn't it? For example, simple example, suppose every day you are taking a lot of sugar, you are bound to get some sick later, diabetes or something like that. So, bhayam abhayam means that Gaudapada Acharya mentions this. He says there, abhaye bhaya darshinaha. He says, bhayam means things what one has to be frightened about. People are not frightened about that. And Siddhinamananda Swamiji, a famous sannyasi, used to say that when he was walking in a big city through a street, one mother was giving the child the food. Mother was feeding the child with the food. So the child, you know how small babies they are. When you feed them, they won't eat. They will try to, even the child is not hungry. Even then mother will say, oh, you have to eat. The mother keeps feeding. The child is pushing its mouth this way, that way. And he's saying, mother wants to finish up the work and go. And mother is trying to feed and the child is hesitating to eat. So that time a policeman come that way. So the mother is selling to the child. This all you will see in villages in India. That here it's all organized, too organized here. Isn't it? There, the policeman comes. The mother says to the child, look, that policeman will take you. She's using it as a weapon to frighten the child, forcing her to eat. Isn't it? So afterwards, this sannyasi Siddhanta Swami says there, the child will come out well later on. Because in whole life, he has seen a sannyasi. And he has got frightened about sannyasam. He says here. So, and he has started frightening about this sannyasam. What one should not be frightened about, he has started getting frightened about. So, similarly, he says there, when the child is not sleeping, the mother says later on, that policeman will come. That's the sannyasi, pointing out to the sannyasi's dress and showing to, and any time when a person with that cloth walks on the street, the mother points out. Nowadays sannyasis don't walk on the street, they are all flying in the first class, so you can't find them anywhere anymore. It's become very difficult, very, very special species they have become now. So what can we do? So in the olden days, sannyasis walked on the streets and they were there, they had no hesitation for doing that. So so they used to fight like that. So what is important here is that we should have fear of Krishna. And that means we should have shelter of Krishna and fear of the world. Fear of the world. We should not have fear of Krishna and shelter in the world. And that's the mistake everywhere happens. That's what Gurubhadajari says there. Abhayo bhaya darshinaha. Where you have to be frightened about, you are not frightened. You have to be frightened about the world. What the world is on offer, giving us on offer. Isn't it? Birth, death, old age and disease, what the body is offering us, and the world is offering various different kinds of distress in one form or the other, and we are not frightened about that. And we are frightened about Krishna, what Krishna is going to do to me tomorrow. That is that opposite way how it is happening. Such a person won't understand what this Krishna is saying here. See, when Krishna is saying karya karya bhaya bhaye means, one who knows karyam, he has that he will have abhayam, freedom from fear. One who does not know, one who knows akaryam, one who is busy with akaryam, he will have bhayam. He will have bhayam. That is the principle. Similarly, about the world, if we have not frightened about this world and feeling relaxed and comfortable with this world, then there is some problem with us. That's what he is saying, Krishna is saying. If after seeing this world and seeing the life in this world and others, if you feel that it's not too bad, life is reasonably good, some people say on the top of the world and all that, they say that. So what to say about that tamogunam inside, working? Krishna is saying that, and when trouble comes in life, we say, oh, I'm frightened, Krishna may do this to me or that to me. Krishna says, I don't do anything to anybody. That is because of your misunderstanding. Kaya gaye bhaya bhayo. So therefore, bhayam, we should frighten about the world, not about Krishna. We should be frightened about this world and we should feel shelter in Krishna. We should feel shelter in Krishna. There is shelter. There is no necessity to be fearful about Krishna. But we have to be frightened about this world. So, so why nature has created this emotion of fear inside us? For example, when you see the fire, you don't touch the fire, isn't it? You should have a fear for that. You should have a fear for that. And nature has done all this fear inside us for our own self-protection. It's an indication to us that you have to be careful about the nature. About the nature. There should be fear in us when we are dealing with the nature from there. And Bhakta Hari mentions this also in his prayer. Bhaktir bhavet marana jayam bhayam hridistham vairagyam asti himatta paramarthaniyam. So nature, she has done this biological fear created in us, physically, biologically fear in us, that certain things you don't do. That itself is an indication that while dealing with the nature or doing viharam in this world, you have to be fearful. But you don't have to be fearful while dealing with Krishna. Instead, we always make this mistake that Krishna is become a source of fear for us. How is he going to deal with me? What's he going to punish me? What's he going to do to me? There's always fear about Krishna. And with the world, we have no fear. We walk around freely here, thinking that everything is safe here. So, bhakti to Krishna and marana janma bhayam hridistham. So, that Bhaktivedanta really mentions there, in again, what is the fear from the life in this world? Oh, if I have to come back here again. At least it's finished with this life. But suppose we have to come back here again. Should that not create a fear inside? And if it's not creating inside any fear, there's something seriously wrong with us. That's the point Bhaktivedanta is making here. So, one point, where fear is required, the fear should be there. And where there is no need to be fearful, we should not be fearful. And that is the point Krishna is stressing there in that words. Pravartimcha nivartimcha karya karye bhaya bhaye. Pravarti and nivarti we have to know first. And then karyam, akaryam, bhayam, abhayam also we have to know. If all these things are known, and similarly he says here, bandham mokshan jaya veti. And he also knows what is bondage and liberation. He knows that. If a person's buddhi is like that, properly settled in all these things, such a buddhi is, he says, buddhi sa partha satvili. Satvili. So now you know what satvili means, isn't it? Satvili buddhi means. When you read Bhagavad Gita first time, you start taking, oh, one is very intelligent, he is in the satogram, one is very little bit dull, he is in the rajogram. Or when it's totally dull, he's in the tamogram. It's not like that. That's not how it works. What we have to understand is that sattva-gunam is the one which makes buddhi proper. Rajogunam is the one which degrades the buddhi. And tamogunam is the last thing that the person has no knowledge of three gunam and he is taking in it. Sometimes you can see people study verses and shastra and all that and start saying, oh, his buddhi is very fixed up, sattva-gunam. And he's the one who goes and creates the most trouble afterwards. So, that's the one point. So, Sneheshu Bhendushu. But where his point is that if you have that Karya Karya Bhaya Bhayo, normally you know in our relationship with our family, friends and all that, that attachment is not there in relationship with them. But does not mean that you don't deal with them. The speciality is there that thinking about them and worrying about them and lamenting about them is not there. That's the important point. Ramamashi used to mention this all the time. He told his mother directly. He said to her, in writing, she gave it to her, that whatever that is meant to happen in this world will happen. You won't be able to change it. Whatever that is not meant to happen, even if you endeavor to create that, it won't happen. That firm realization inside is necessary in spiritual life. Otherwise you can't understand, because it's very easily, you can see this, how emotions override intelligence. In the Bhagavatam there is very, very, very good example for this. Lord Shiva and Sri Parvati in the fourth canto. Dakshayagam was going on. Did not invite them. You know the story, isn't it? Daksha did not invite them. Sri Parvati goes to, coming from emotions. She says to Shiva, Lord Shiva, we should go. Do I need an invitation to go to my father's house? And she says, spiritual master, to my spiritual master's house and to my parents' house. Husband says, I don't need an invitation, she says. So she is logical, but she has emotions driving them. Lord Shiva is saying to her that I can't go along with that because I know what will happen if I go there. He knew in advance what was going to happen. Lord Shiva, isn't it? He is saying to her, if we go there, it will end up in your death. He warned her all of these things. And he even said to her that it can cause great, great distress for so many people. And that included Daksha himself. He had to lose his head and get a goat's head and all that. Isn't it? So there, Lord Shiva is speaking based on the buddhi. Sri Bhavari is speaking based on the emotions. Based on the emotions. This is where things get... So, similarly in relationship with the family members, this is important. That it's not that you don't have the love or affection for them, but it cannot fall into emotional state. It has to be based on knowledge. It's based on knowledge. So otherwise, they will give you trouble and you will give them trouble as well. And that emotional approach is harmful, is very harmful. And so that is the very nature of this relationship. Then the tamasa gunam also is mentioned there. that tamasa means samsarga dosham. That means due to association with others, developing bad habits inside us. So, some people, you may not have it now, but due to association with others, you will develop these habits. These habits. Therefore, Krishna advises many times that to live alone and to move away from the, to free yourself from the samsarga dosha due to contamination due to association. Due to association. So, and therefore, Bhattacharya also says there, to help for you in their process, Vairagyam is there to help. Is there to help. What else is required? Vairagyam eva abhayam. He finishes that verse there. Vairagyam eva abhayam. He says, Vairagyam is a shelter for you in that situation. In that situation. Marana janma bhayam hridistvam. In other words, you've got to be always frightened about the next body. What's going to happen? That I have to accept another body. That fear always inside. Then I have to come back here. And if you, when somebody says to you, oh, if I have to take birth again, I have to die. And the fear that whether you may fall into another situation bodily, you get a birth in some place where you did not have the opportunity to develop spiritually. Simply have to live a life of an animal in this world. So if the fear is there, that fear is a force inside. It's a good force inside if you have that fear. And that fear will protect us in engaging in nefarious activities or any kind of sinful activities and protect us from falling into something which is bad for our future. So it's a protective force if you have that fear inside, and that will help, and that's necessary. That's what Krishna is saying here. So fear is required where it is required. Where it is necessary, where it is required. At the same time, when it comes to great personalities, great devotees, or great jnanis, or even Krishna, there should be no fear with them. We should not create any fear towards them. Because actually, fear means this relationship with the great souls, and with Krishna, of him. In other words, so that state is Advaita. That means there is no two, there is only one. Only in that relationship you can be fearless with them. When you are thinking that you are two, separate from them, then in the relationship there will always this fear will come in. Kavi Maharshi says this in the Bhagavatam. Bhayam jidiya labhinivesha tasyal isha dabeda simpare yosmati. As soon as boredom comes inside, there must be fear. Suppose there is two, one has to be fearful of the other. This is the nature of the material world. You can't remain otherwise. You will always be fearful about the other person. So, Bhayam Diriyala Abhinivesha Vasya Ishana Vedasya Vireyosmadi. Bhavi Maharshi says this. So, that is important point. In fear means, if you want fearlessness means Advaitam at that time. So, so that knowledge is Jnanam. That Jnanam and there Abhayam is necessary, freedom from the fear. And in the material life, you should live with fear. In spiritual life, you should be fearless with the knowledge of the Advaitic knowledge. Should make you fearless in the spiritual life. In the material life, you should live with fear all the time for spiritual benefit. For spiritual benefit. And that means not to get caught up in unwanted things and not engaging in unnecessary harm in this world and not to get involved in things which are not of any benefit spiritually. Always to be alert. Always to be alert. And for this is called common sense. This is called common sense. Fear. That's common sense. To refrain from unnecessary transactions in this world, to remain always fearful of the problems of this world and how it is going to cause problems for you in future, about fear of accepting another body and coming here, and not getting involved in unnecessary things in this world, and always to remain alert, that is called common sense. And that's not fear. Sometimes people say, I'm not fearful, I'm very fearless, they say, and I don't have any fear. I don't have any fear. Just like Hitler said. Hitler was when he used to declare that to the world, how he is free from fear, very courageous, ready to bomb and attack any country and all that. He had a lot of courage for doing that. But he couldn't sleep at night. Why? Because always the fear somebody may kill him. He had some agents to look after him. And those agents were spied by others to see that if they are going against Hitler. All of them do that. Saddam Hussein did the same thing. If you look into his life, you will see. That's how they live. And many, many dictators in this world, they had to live like this. Always fearful that somebody behind will put the knife anytime. And even though very trusted people were very close to them, they were not trusted. There were others employed to watch them. Because they don't know when they will put the knife anytime. Isn't it? So, even though they were very close to them, attendants to them, so what they used to do, they keep changing them all the time, not knowing that whether they will be reliable or trustworthy. Because next moment what they will do, you don't know. You don't know. And so fear about them. And same thing is there in very wealthy people also. You will observe these things in a very highly rich people. And similarly, people who are in very high positions. Politics is quite common. It's very interesting sometimes. All these things come out much later, after the politicians have fallen away from their positions. Isn't it? When they were, there's always somebody, plotting behind. Somebody's plotting behind. Every party leader knows that. That somebody is plotting behind. And then that won't be known till the whole episode is over. And it's not only here, it happens all over the world. All over the world it's happening. Every democracy it has to happen. Every dictatorship also it happens in a different way. So that fear, that is a kind of fear, and therefore and they are always fearful. Fearful of the world, isn't it? So that is why in Puranam they make fun of all these things, you know, what the politicians are doing. And similarly business people also, in big business enterprises, the CEO is frightened about his other members of the board who is plotting against him. And he has to be careful, and he also has his own network inside to report back to him what everybody is thinking about him or things like that. Because to sustain that position is not easy. You have to be like this all the time. And even though somebody who is very close to him, his chief executive will be very close to him, somebody close to him, he'll become very much careful about him. That is he after my position? When is he trying to do that? So that you can see. So this connection with the world, they consider, is like marrying Shubhanaga. So, there's a verse like that. Shurpanaya came to marry Ramachandra, isn't it? So, then the question will come that was there nobody else in Sri Lanka who could marry Shurpanaya? Was there? And but when they inquired, they found out many men have married Shurpanaya before they came to marry Ramachandra. But whenever she felt hungry, she will eat them. So this is what, she was a Rakshasi, wasn't it? Rakshasic nature. So she used to eat them whenever she felt hungry. So she has married many times. And when she felt hungry, she ate them. So when in the morning when she woke up, there was no husband. Husband is gone. So similarly, that is one system. So if you want to destroy something, a committee or a management or an institution, what you do, you get in someone who has that nature, who can destroy the whole thing by his way of doing things. So if you get him in, then very soon he will break the whole committee into pieces. So therefore, such people are called Shurpanaya married. Shubhi married. Because he will do things like the way Shurpanaya has done. He will destroy himself, everything. And people know that if such a person gets into the committee of the management like that, he will destroy everything one way or the other. Vayaghadaya kanya udvahanam. That is what it's called.
Varakhadaya Kanya Uddohanam. Ajaya Swami uses that example of Shopaniga in the commentary. Varakhadaya means killing the husband, Kanya Uddohanam, for satisfying her own needs. So certain things what we do here in this world, if it has some motive behind it, it will be like this, that you are getting her married so that she can eat the husband later, in that sense. That certain things we plan in this way, in this world, we get somebody in, and there is a motive behind it, because we know that if that person gets in, he will spoil the whole thing. He'll spoil it, because he won't spoil it. But you are using somebody else to get it. So many things, it happens like this all the time. So if they go and catch hold of anything in this world, it will create cause fear for others. And there's always this fear that one day you will lose everything. For example, you have the fear that one day, fear from this world we are talking about, if I get some serious illness will come to me. Or somebody is going to leave me in life, all these things. Or something else will happen to my body. All this kind of fear is always in. Krishna is saying here that actually everybody is running around in this world to get out of this fear from inside. And what should I do in this world for that? And that is why we are all engaged in karma. Krishna's answer to that. The reason why we are engaged in karma is because of this. Because of this fear. What will happen to this body if I don't do anything? And that fear. So, bhayam, abhayam. Krishna is saying here. Abhayam is brahmam. Jnanam. Bandham okshanchaya veti. Samsara bandham. Or material bondage means jananam maranam. Birth and death. Sukham dukham. Happiness and distress. Dundvam. Or duality. Duality is there. Dvaidam is there. Dundvam is there. Means these things won't go. That's the point Krishna is making. If you have dvandvam in you, if you have dvaidam in you, jara, that means birth and death, that fear, or happiness or distress, and this situation where we are now, all these things mixed up with us, isn't it? We all have these things, birth and death, happiness and distress. And this existence, along with the body, this is bondage. You understand what bondage means now? Bondage means that always this fear inside, all of us, isn't it? Death is going to come one day. So I'm working for the pension, I'm working for the... Something will be, which will protect me at the old age? This fear. That's why people are working, isn't it? Everybody is looking into the pension pot, and that pension pot is going one day. Like that. We are not thinking about today. We are thinking about the future, what is in storage for us. So because of the fear of the pension and old age, we are working today. Is it not? And similarly, we also know that death is coming, and there will be, if you are following Bhagavad Gita, you also have the fear of the birth, as bad as the death. You'll be fearful. Suppose you had to accept another body and come back here and start the whole thing again. That's a very fearful situation. So birth and death, and similarly, happiness and distress in this world also is not guaranteed. Even in spite of working so hard, the after effect of that could show up in your body. You become sick tomorrow. Some illness comes. You are not able to remain healthy. Lot of that cause may be attributed to your way of working life in this world. At the age of 30, 35, you have gone old. You have lost the juice of your life. Just gone away. So, that fear, am I getting older? Am I getting older? While working, even in the youth, you feel this fear of getting old age. So, old age and death, rebirth, happiness and distress, all other anxieties associated with that. Krishna is saying there, this is always together with this body and existing within this body. And in existing like this, in this pattern, in this world, is called bondage. See that? Krishna uses that word. Bandham mokshanjaya veti. Veti, bandham is like this. Know that what bandham means first. We don't think like that. Problem with us is, we think bandham means, oh, I'm a devotee now, but when I leave this body,
I'm golden spiritual, I'm liberated. That's not what bandha means. Bandha means recognizing all these things now here. That is what understanding bandha means. Right now, here, am I in bondage? Yes, we are in bondage. And recognizing that is bandha. That is it's called bandha. And we are thinking that external freedom is freedom. That's what our normal concept is, isn't it? That we are externally free, I'm free to speak what I want, or I'm free to write what I like, or all this is, we consider it as freedom. But not in Krishna says. He said, and that is the reason why people are fighting for independence in this world. It's enough. But even after fighting, have we become independent? We have become more dependent, more slaves of that, isn't it? So, as far as Krishna is concerned, one who has no knowledge of the self, he has no freedom. This is the important point. If you have no knowledge of the self, and you have no realization of the self, you are not free. You are not free. So, so this you can see here, like in the politics, a few people have become leaders somehow, politicians. When they become leaders, they have made some decision that this is how we are going to run the country. And we have to follow them. We have no choice, isn't it? They made the law. So a few politicians got together. And they felt that this is the right thing to do. They together made the decision. And that has become the law. And what is happening is that they have ragadvesham there inside them. And it is their ragadvesham, attachment and aversion, that is controlling us in our life now. Is it not? You can see this if you look at the life. So, and then you are saying that you have got freedom. What freedom have you got? You haven't got any freedom. It's all false things. That falsely we have been told that, oh, we are a free country, we are free, we are free. You're not free. You're completely under the control of this ragadvesham of the leaders, whoever that may be, wherever that may be. Doesn't matter. It's their ragadvesham that is deciding your destiny in life here. They will make the law to suit their, according to their ragam and dvesham, and based on that you have to live in this world. They make the law, they dictate to you, they educate you, they tell you how to live in this world. They put everything on you. And how do you say you are free? There is no freedom there. So, so in all of this, Krishna is saying is bandha. All of this. So freedom means knowledge of the self and nothing but knowledge of the self. Outside that, there is no freedom. That's the important point. We'll discuss it further tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada.
Dinadiyat Mahaprabhu ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.